Josh Holland Watts, WDFW.
Bob 44, Dallas.
Agnes Liu, Bonneville Power.
John Rarisich, Core, Portland District.
Tammy Mackey, Core, Portland District.
Scott Benton, BPA.
Trevor Conner, No Fisheries.
Tim Phone, Core, Wall.
David Wells, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Brandon Shockley, Fish Passive Center.
Miro Zindo, John Day, Core.
Nate Scott, Public Power Council.
Okay, thanks. And who do we have on the phone?
Senator Core McNary.
Fred Lasek, Pacific States.
Chris Fanny, Core and Walla Walla.
Hawker Smith, Core and Walla Walla.
Okay. So, does anyone have anything else they would like to add to the agenda today?
I have a pile of things.
All right.
I'm not sure if they're all in there or not, but I was having the agenda was changing, so, and I've been busy, so I had a chance to really look it over. But one thing I want to talk about, this becoming the pinnipeds, is sea lion hazing out of Bonneville, and also the four bay sea lions and how we get that into the reports. I'm not sure, maybe Stansel's gone in there already, but we need to make sure that we're starting to keep an eye on that situation too as it develops. Also, I want to talk a little bit about how we document decisions from our task groups. And Tammy, you can maybe help me here a bit because I couldn't, the webpage wasn't exactly working when I was on it the other day, so I couldn't. Sorry, but I couldn't tell what we had in there, but questions have come up about zinc and fishways again, and I want to make sure that our criteria are laid out there, and I couldn't find them any place. There's, you know, either we need some place in the fish passage plan that has maybe a new appendix that talks about decisions by the task group when they don't apply to any particular dam, but, you know, or sort of a general guidance sort of things. So, I was looking for that one in there, and it's also looking for what our protocols are for sea lion hazing and BRZs, and I couldn't look at that, and I'm pretty sure we have criteria, and we have some, I have some photos here of some incidents that I'm a little concerned about what I've seen out there, so I'm going to talk about that. And then I think the AFF protocols are going to be, they're probably on.
Yeah, so I got almost all of your... except for the zinc, I got all of your items. I anticipated talking about the sea lions under the pinniped update.
Yeah, we can. There's a couple of things for there. The zinc one's kind of separate.
That link is now working, though. The link for the zinc task group is now working.
And is our protocol in there? And we need to link that somewhere where folks know how to find that. And Walla Walla called me about that when we talked about it a bit. And David.
That's related to the JFF upgrade.
Yeah, for the JFF lower grant improvements. So, but you know, we just want to make sure that everybody who's doing work on the river understands the guidance is good. And that's a little different because it's juveniles versus adults, and so there's.
And I think the one thing that I'm aware of that's raised people's eyebrows a little bit was probably the adult fishway just grading replacement in kind, and we can have that discussion, but basically with O&M money, expense money, all the only thing that can be done is in kind replacement, and there was a safety issue there for personnel to access that area, and so that's why it was done. And there's nothing stopping someone who has other funds or other means for that to be, you know, changed out into something. We're certainly looking at other projects in the future that we have to keep our eye on as well. And
let's get to the point there, but I want to make sure we're on the protocol for non positions.
Okay. So then we have at least two things, and Ken, you can let me know if there's anything else. We have another form on Lomo outfall that I don't believe was sent out, that's come up in the last couple days. And then we have something that I made a phone call yesterday just briefly to NIMS on, and that's related to the headgates in Unit 6 at McNary, and just overall trying to meet some of the constraints for being operating and having screens down by the 15th of April. So, anything else?
And this is Carl. While we're talking about that, I also want to talk about the possibility of extending the screen drop date from the 15th to like another day or two. We think we can still make the schedule working through the weekend, but it's...
Okay.
Serious trash track problems we need to address, which may be more important than the screens at this point.
Right. Okay, so you're going to stay on, right, Carl?
Yes, I'll stay on.
Okay.
One other update asked about is the Bonneville spillway hoists, and we're done with those, and you know, where are we at? So that can be later when Ben gets on, but I just want to know what's the status there.
Okay.
Here's the interesting.
Okay.
I'm so optimistic that we'd actually get this thing done
after we have.
About the March 2013 FPOM minutes, does anybody have any comments, any reason that we can't approve those? Deep breaths. Okay, sounds like it's good to go. Move into the first action item. Action item was McNair Unit Priority. I think we took care of this.
Done.
All right. I just hadn't heard, so it stayed on here.
Okay. So then it would be Portland action items. First one.
That's delayed until October.
Okay. Second one.
Second one I don't think is complete. Those are the BPA outages?
Yep.
We haven't received any change forms yet.
Okay.
We do for Unit 18 and for the outages at McNary. That's what was decided at the last meeting, I guess. And I haven't completed the last one yet. So can we switch Walla Walla updates to before the Portland update?
Sure, that'd be great. I think we have a request that Ken fielded to try to move the McNary headgate discussion that's sort of new to the front because Brad was only going to be able to stay on the phone for a couple minutes. So I'll outline a little bit of what we have there. This past week we've been in the process of the project doing dives to install the equipment for Brad's study, and as they got the divers in the forebay, they started encountering a lot of debris on the trash racks so that they weren't able to attach the equipment. So the project then, the dives were postponed. The project went in to start raking the trash on Unit 6, and as they were shutting down units, the trash was shifting back so that they were having a problem getting it clean enough, even after they shut it down and go back, that there was shifting going on. So that's affecting, number one, the installation schedule, but it's also affecting the installation time frame for the ESPSs at McNary, because Crane 5 is used for all of these activities. So for raising and lowering headgates as well as raising and lowering ESPSs. So that said, I don't think we have anything adverse that's really changing with the study. I made a call yesterday just for a heads up to Gary. We had a request from the project that in order to spend their effort most efficiently on trying to get the trash racks clean and trying to stay on schedule, would it be okay to go ahead in Unit 6 and leave the head gates in the lowered position for the additional 3 days rather than raising them after they put them in and then dropping them back. And so that's what we did. So that's the three gate wells at Unit 6. So that's where we are. And, you know, as we heard, Carl's on the phone. Carl, if you'd like to give us an update as of yesterday where you're at, it sounded like you suggested that you're going to work through the weekend on this with the hope still of trying to meet the 15th for having all the screens down, but depending on how this situation continues to evolve, you may still need a day or two extra in order to finish all that work.
Right. The question is, where is it smartest to spend our time on right now? We had a 7% injury rate the other day, and I'm waiting for the report from Pacific States right now for what it is today, but that's due to the trash on the trash racks, and we're measuring the differentials right now, and I got a report back initially. We're not done yet, but there's like a serious problem with unit number 5. So I think we're to the point now where fish would actually be better off if we stopped dropping screens and started focusing on raking trash, getting that problem out of the way, then go back to dropping screens. But I'm not sure we can do both by the 15th. That's pushing it. If we had another day or two to drop the screens, that will enable us to get in there and rake the trash and get rid of that problem. We'd probably save more fish by doing that.
So the other thing that we discussed on the phone, myself and Tim Roberts, was whether there was a need to talk to FPOM about potentially putting on the table a couple days out emergency spill to move some of this trash that's submerged. I understand that it's just basically submerged tumbleweed, and I guess the response I got was we didn't think it would be that effective because even when we turn off the unit, it's still kind of sucked in fairly close to the project, and it's not out. And so I assume you still agree with that and that you feel your best path forward is just to go ahead and try to rake it off?
I think we got to rake it. I think that's really the best solution. So, you know, just, you know, that high an injury rate, like I said, I don't have today's report, but I doubt if it's going to be much better.
And so, Ann, we did do emergency spill intentionally. We were spilling 145K before the season.
Oh.
Because of this dive, and the powerhouse is limited to 75K.
Oh.
So we were dumping the river, and it wasn't moving.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
I've tried that before, and it hasn't really worked anyway. Yeah. So that's not the solution. A couple questions. One, is research affecting this in any way?
Installation of the research equipment.
Okay.
So
that's all complete now.
Oh, it is all complete?
That's been finalized as of Monday or Tuesday.
There shouldn't be any use of anything out there for research if it means we don't get those screens down in time.
We did run into a problem yesterday with the high winds. We had to shut the crane down. I think they're up there working right now, but if the winds come up again, that's going to delay us that much further.
So where's the debris coming from? Is this new? Is this something?
Tumbleweeds are mostly out of the Yakima Basin, but some up River South.
Came in about a week ago. We had a really good storm, about 60-mile-an-hour storm or something.
So it's just showing up pretty much.
And some of the snake dams dumped a bunch of it down there, spillways too, so we're getting some of that.
Thanks a lot.
But the thing is, one scoop load fills up the truck, and we only have the one truck, so you're running this truck back and forth constantly. It just takes forever.
Carl, this is Dave Wills. It reminds me of the situation that we had a couple years ago. Are you seeing any increased numbers of juvenile lamprey in the bypass systems?
Oh, thank God, no.
Okay.
Are you checking the debris that you're pulling out?
They are. Those
well, no, nothing so far. We haven't seen fish in the debris, but we are getting the injuries on the smolts as they're coming through.
Okay.
Okay.
So. Yeah. But if we can have like another day or two, that would enable us to get in there and do the raking we got to do, and then worry about dropping screens. But
yeah,
I really think
it is in the order that you talked about, Carl.
Yeah, I think the raking is more important than the screens at this point.
Yeah, we agree. I thank everybody. I see everybody nodding their head.
Okay, so everybody agrees, Carl. Thank you.
I'll tell them then so they can get on it.
All right, that'll be great.
Okay.
So, anybody else have any comments related to that topic? Okay.
Do we envision any problems with the instrumentation with the debris buildup?
I don't believe so. I believe that that's a good question, and maybe that's a place for Brad, if you're still on, to comment. Now that the debris is still shifting and you do have your gear in place, do you expect any adverse effects to the equipment that's in place as a result of this debris?
Well, the hope is that no, considering the hydroacoustic transducer on the trash rack as far as on the back side, I don't expect it to be an issue. Hopefully, when they rake it, they can just clean it off and it won't be a problem. But I guess if it is, then we'll just deal with that later on once all the issues are taken care of for the project.
Right, but would you require diving to fix them?
We would have to get back into that realm again. Yeah. So what I might end up doing is calling Rick Benoit and talking to the guys at PNNL and trying to have a plan in place and if necessary just to get back in and fix that and start coordinating with folks at the dam to make sure that we can actually fit that in without too big of a problem.
Okay, we'll stay tuned.
And those instruments are unit 6 and any other?
7.
7.
Yeah, and all gate.
Yeah.
It's all 3 gate wells at both unit 6 and 7?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Next one would be the Little Goose spillway stop log testing. And I basically, at this point, we didn't have another update until some of the contract details. I think John may have had some brief discussions with Bill since then, and at this point in time, they expect those to be delivered sometime around the end of May, but that date is shifting, and so I think at the next meeting, we should have better information just to have some more discussion.
Yeah, I spoke with the chief operations about that,
Portland,
and
Gates
he said just because of the delay, and maybe the waters in May, they will just wait until in the spill in September to actually do the testing. That would just less effect on the spill and all that.
Okay, so the next one was the MFR that went out for Little Goose. And that was kind of a after the fact. People may recall that at the last FPOM meeting, I believe it was Ken that gave a brief that we were aware that they were going to be doing some bathymetry work in the tail race at Little Goose. And he had been unable to get details of that implementation from the project because it was a new process, etc. And so he then sent out that MFR, and I don't know if anybody wanted to have any further discussion on that. Everybody okay with that? Okay.
Can we go back to the Little Goose, the one you're doing the gate testing? Is that going to be in September, of course, Bill, in September?
I think the idea is it wouldn't require any spill. That's why they'd wait to September.
You can just do the testing.
I believe it.
I thought they had to have spill occurring and then shut the gate to get the pressure on.
You didn't mention that.
I see it's technically on the folder. It's actually, where's your sign? It's gone already.
I think it's getting kicked out because even the project is frustrated with the contractor on this, and they're like, you know what, this is a perfect example of something that we should kick out beyond having impacts on fish. This is really unreasonable kind of thing. It's kind of where they're at, so.
Yeah. If it requires spill, let me know.
Okay. Next one. Just
a comment on the bathymetry. Just the preliminary, what I've heard of the results of that is there's quite a bit of erosion in the tail race, and especially below the adult entrances. So so now it goes into, we'll get a report sometime in the future, and we'll have to do the planning of how to fix the erosion in the tail race of Little Goose.
Yeah, apparently they found a lot of issues. Bill mentioned, there's erosion like underneath, it's undercutting the fish entrances. So, and then you have problems below the spillway and below the tail race. So, some of these problems could be caused in maybe the delay in the adults that's come up with the
problem. I've joined the conference.
You have these sort of different eddies and you have these deep holes, and now maybe all contributing to the adult delay problem. Plus, I see this is a big safety issue. So we'll get a report probably in a couple months, and we can fill you in on what they found.
Well, where the erosion's occurring, I think, would be a good update for folks because I've heard a couple different versions. I hear the entrances, but then in another meeting the other day with engineering folks, it sounded like it was on either side of the spill bay apron, which would suggest that it's the North Shore entrance and the North Powerhouse entrance and not affecting the South Shore entrance. And so I think those details people would probably like to know.
And also when you're like the last time you had a service in the sea, like when this erosion has occurred.
Okay.
The July meeting.
I'd be expected to get the report sometime in May, so maybe the June meeting.
Okay, any other comments on that? Next one is Ice Harbor Unit 2, return to service testing and results. So you gonna do that one, Ken, or?
Unit 2, you recall there was that MLC that went out about a week or two ago, and the project wanted to bring Unit 2 back, they brought back Unit 2 back to service, and they wanted to run it out of Unit Priority just so you could make sure it was all good, you know. And so what I understand was they did run it that day. It was on the 28th of March. But it was only run for like 4 or 5 hours in the evening. And I don't think they completed the testing. I'm a little unclear about that. I asked the project bio about that. There may be something else on this maybe in the future about wanting to test it further. Maybe run out of unit priority. So if that happens, we'll take that coordination form.
What is unit priority then?
The fish passage plan.
Oh, so we have 136425 at this time.
Yeah.
Why do we have two so far down the road? There wasn't four.
Yeah, you know, we just changed the unit priority, if you might recall, in this fish passage plan, and now I think we're in the process of going back to what we had before. We just made the change for last year. That's what's happening.
It might be two is the unit that's leaked oil for 10 years. We put it low on the priority.
Yeah. Huh? Two also was leaking, but has that been solved?
I don't think anything is absolutely not leaking.
Oh, okay.
At Ice Harbor.
So you have a 1950s, 1960s Pinto, you said.
Yeah, I would say that.
That's why you have that big oil boom in the tail race.
Well, you know, a lot of what we're seeing is just, you know, a few tables here and there, but the history is that my understanding in talking to the OEM out there is that, there's a constant little bit being lost from the
Bobcats.
So I read in the Columbian the other day, my buddy was actually telling me, he's like, hey, do you hear they spilled 1,500 gallons of oil at Bonneville at a turbine unit? And I'm like, what? I didn't hear that's BS, you know. So I look at it, he shows me the paper, he's like, it's right here, and I look at it, and it's in the opinion section. But it said that, you know, there was a very small spill at Bonneville, but it said that Ice Harbor last year there was 1,500 gallons. And I didn't know what kind of credibility the guy had, but is that's not on the order of what we're talking about here, right?
No, we're talking more. I mean, some of the last week or two, they start talking about tablespoonful amount that you could actually still see a sheen. So it's really just it's a very small amount, you know, that really my understanding is that there is always a very small amount coming out of when we operate these units, and always has been. Now, last year, what we found is that there were some additional problems where more was being lost, and so at that point in time, we did have some coordination forms that we brought in here and talked about that. But this is it's small amounts, and I think it's kind of suggestive of places where seals have worn, et cetera, and that you can't go back in, and especially now when we're looking at overall replacement here in 15 and 16, you know, they've done what they can to shore that up, but nothing is kind of fail-safe, if you will. I believe it's all food grade, so.
But there are tens of thousands of gallons of oil used in our system. There are large quantities.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's.
But it is there. I mean, the number is very, very large. I mean,
Okay. Any other questions on that one? I think the next one, Lower Granite ESBSs, was on here for me to give an update. We talked at the last meeting that we intended to do gate well dipping in units 4 and 6, expecting that the John Day screens ESBSs that we had moved up there due to the bent frames would be installed in gate wells in the C slot of 4, 5, and 6. At this point in time, the project is thinking that they may only have to put it in C slot of gate wells of unit 6. Now, they've got a spare, and they apparently fixed one of the other three frames, and so they essentially have two spares. And my understanding is that the process for gate well dipping has been worked out between Mike Halter and WDFW to be a day when they have three bios. It would be one day a week. I believe it's Thursday. And what we talked about at the last meeting was a target of roughly 100 fish per gate well slot, not starting until May and going through the first 2 weeks of June, so that we would have some coverage of all the major species and some data on those as they were passing. The other thing that came up as part of coordinating the project is a standard gate well dip goes down like 30 feet into the gate well. At Lower Granite, because of the large volume of fish potentially passing in May and early June, Mike asked if there were some ability to not go that deep. You know, how critical was it to have exactly 100? And I said, definitely would prefer that you didn't go over 100. You know, could they go 10 feet? And so they are going to start with a 10-foot dip rather than going 30 feet down in order to minimize impact to any fish that were in the gate well. So I wanted to make that to everybody's attention in case anybody had any issues there. At the project, they had talked about whether there would be some propensity for injured fish to be higher in the gate well, and I did not potentially really buy into that. The role with the ESBSs is such that a lot of times we have live fish holding on the edges of the gate wells, and certainly there's a dead spot in the corner, so that I wouldn't say dead, but a more calm spot in the corner. So if there were fish that were, you know, not alive, they could potentially be there. However, I personally think that we can still get a random sample by going only 10 feet deep, and we minimize any impact, you know, to the run largely. So just want to make sure everybody's on board with that.
So what if the unit doesn't run that week?
That's an interesting question. If the unit doesn't run, then they won't do any sampling.
Or do you want to run it just to make sure you can sample? Because your unit order right here is 2, 3, 4 through 6. And so you could run it if you want to make sure you get some sampling.
The path forward that we have is to come up, but our preferred path at this time is by next year to have the perf plates changed out so that we have screens that are the same as what we have in them now. So that this is seen as a temporary operation. At the same time, however, we wanted to gather data because what if we don't get the money? I mean, these times there's nothing certain there. And if we got data and we couldn't distinguish between slots A, B, and C, did that mean that next year maybe we wanted to put them in B and, you know, kind of sequentially move through? You know, I mean, there's those scenarios out there if we didn't go ahead and switch them out. But our big picture plan is we want them to be identical so that they can be moved between slots. The other agreement that we have with the project, and this is with the OPM, and that is if they have to use one of these spare screens in any other C slot, it will go into a C slot, and then that will immediately mean that we start adding that other unit to our gate well dipping process. So when we have any of these John Day screens in, that will roll into getting some sampling done and evaluation so that we have data.
But it sounds like you need to run the minimum amount to have a valid test.
You know, this is, we want, you know, what's a valid test? I think sample size is important for a valid test. If our long-term path is not that we intend to continue this forever, then validity is secondary. I think valid test, as I see it, is, hey, if we're operating them, I don't want him only collecting 10 fish, so if two are dead, it looks like we have a horrible percentage. So let's shoot for 100 fish because that gives us a reasonable assessment of condition. But, yeah, I guess if you know more than I do about our likelihood of not getting these changed out, if you will, one of the things that the project is looking at and working with engineering, and I believe that would be Martin Ahman perhaps, is drilling more holes and trying to get the same amount of open space. They're definitely finding that there's a difference in the open space on these John Day screens versus the Lower Granite screens.
Be careful with that because we spent a lot of time working on that. We actually had screens fall apart up there because of the porosity and harmonics that were set up. So those screens are not used to be.
So.
Self-destructive problems.
Yeah.
And they probably won't last long term anyway.
I know, I hear that. But if getting into modifying them, that definitely like the history there.
The interesting thing is there's more supports on the John Day screens, mm-hmm. and where those supports go block off some of the porosity as well. Right. So one of the possible routes as you go to make them the same is you go in and cut out some of those additional supports. Either that or you have to
The reason why they're there is because they were vibration cells to pieces and vibration. So there's a history of those screens. And all I'm saying is that Mark needs to look at the history with Portland District
before they start going
get together. If there's anybody still alive who's worked on it way back when.
Right. So I think they're trying to leave the supports in place, but it's not like you can take the perf plates that were in the screens that we had at Lower Granite and put them in with those supports and get what we need.
And you can't
so that's
take
not
the
an
porosity.
Option.
I mean, you can't take the, you know, just the porosity value and apply it willy-nilly to another screen. You've got to really balance the screen. So it's a process. You know, Bob Davidson probably had to be a person involved in that.
So, and where I was going with my thinking is if those screens are fine, you find there's no problem with gable dipping, why don't we just leave them alone and use them as is? Is that possible? Why put the other screens on? The ones we have on them are fine.
Well, that was a little bit of why we're doing the evaluation. But the thing is, because we're not running them in all slots from a safety standpoint, you know. So our engineering folks weighed in that they thought, hey, just run them in C slot. Let's just make sure that C slot with the lowest flow is good. And then, you know, if your process is that you don't want to do anything or you don't want to spend, because it's a considerable amount of money, work slowly in. You know, then maybe come back and put one in a B slot. And then third year, go ahead, try an A, but be ready to pull it if you saw any flags. If not, then you could be interchangeable. But it wasn't something to move into too quickly. They were very hesitant that we jump in and let stuff just happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, but the cost of the changeout is so high that it's worth taking your time at it.
Yep.
It's a big dent you're owing them.
It is. It's, you know, it's estimated to be $1.2 million. Yeah, I think we talked about that at the last meeting.
Right.
So,
I would almost recommend that we run it enough to have comfort with C slot and then next year run B slot.
So that's a comment that you would like to hear me take back is you'd prefer to have it in four?
Well, you don't want to just say, I need to replace them next year, which is the path you seem to be on.
Well, flexibility is where what the project's looking for, right?
Well, they sound like they have two, now they have, what, five spares?
No, they have two spares.
How many did they move up? They have two spares.
They brought three up.
Okay.
And they have two spares because one of the bent frames, there was three bent frames, one of them wasn't bent as severely as the other two. Two of them could no longer be fixed. They have to be surplus, excess, whatever. One was able to be fixed, which is why we only now need to put one in a C slot rather than two. So we had talked at the last meeting about not putting one in five because there was going to be all this research equipment in 5B for the overflow weir, et cetera.
What's the cost of building a single screen? Single slot. If you just rebuild a brand new number A, so you have a spare for A's.
That is a good question. I'm not sure if it's been costed out. I think a couple years ago, looking back at the original cost, it's a good question. I think you're looking easily at a million or more, a little bit over. It might be about the same as the revamp for two or three. And then what we're weighing as well is dependent on the kind of funding that we have available. If we had only were to find capital funding, then we could go in and do some of the corrosion resistance that we haven't been able to do on these, and that's why there's a lot of corrosion around on these ESBSs. And so, we're kind of taking a look long term to see what we can do if and when we have funds to restore these to make them last longer. We've actually asked our maintenance engineering group up in ops to see if they could develop kind of a report making a suggestion so that we would have uniformity between our three projects with ESBSs in the methodology that they would go through for the rehab. At this point in time, it's been up to each individual OPM, and depending on what they find when they're pulled up, you know, they address kind of what they find. But you know, there's the potential for a Cadillac versus a Volkswagen, and so we're going to see what we can do, although, of course, we're challenged financially as to priorities there. The history is that the last 2 years that Tim was in this position, as well as since I've been in here, we've been trying to get ESPS's rehab that Laura granted by setting aside some O&M money, and there's always been something that's gotten in the way. And so of the 18 screens, one has had the opportunity because of just, well, you know, this year it was the other screens that needed some support before they could find some other money to get this stuff moved up here. And just, you know, just the situation the way it is, although we are trying to work for a process that we'll have in place and look long-term towards having uniformity. We wouldn't be looking at doing anything between projects. It would always be within project swaps. You know, that's been obvious here, but...
How old are those screens?
The screens at, I believe, Laura Granite went in 1995, and those were the screens that were destined for Little Goose, but the Granite screens weren't delivered, so they brought the Little Goose screens up to Laura Granite in 95, and then the Goose screens went in 96. And McNary would have been 94, 95.
And it makes a lot of sense to me to go slow approach here, like you're going on this, test these and test it in C slot of unit 6, compare it to the other slots. And because these same screens created a lot of havoc at John Day, I remember we really tried for several years, right, to get something that worked there.
Sounds like 3 years of modifications.
Yeah, yeah, and
so
we weren't successful.
How do you feel about Scott's suggestion? I mean, is Unit 6 the best?
No, I would put it low priority, but I would like to see some
data
well dipping and see what we got. Okay. But I wouldn't jump right in and run that baby.
Okay, so that's kind of where we're at with the priority. When we're in the peak of the runoff, 6 will be on. And then I'm not sure if we're all aware, you know, 6 is scheduled to go out this summer for cavitation repair, so I believe that's the 1st of July, so that will be the latest that it would be used. And depending on the runoff, then will depend on when Unit 6 is run. But it's anticipated, you know, the month of May and or early June that it potentially could be run, although it sounds like Scott maybe has some water management insights that I don't have.
Snake River with not much water in it, so
right.
It may never run for very long.
Okay.
So that's the check
mark. There you go. So that's why the question of how much do you need to run it to know.
So what we get this year will be a cautious approach. You know, if it's only run for a couple weeks, we'll get some idea of whether or not there's the potential for an issue that we need to follow up on, or whether we're comfortable. You know, either way, it's going to be a time when there's a lot of fish, because it'll only be a time when there's the peak, probably, based on what you're saying, and that may be a very narrow time frame this year. So we're likely to get probably some Chinook and steelhead, whether it be spring Chinook or fall Chinook. That'll just depend on when that runoff comes. Okay, let's keep moving then, and unless anybody has any other comments. The next one is the Laura Granite Powerhouse Roof Repair Update, and Ken, I believe you were going to cover that?
Yeah, as you're all aware, the coordination form went out toward the end of March regarding the, I mentioned, this is also mentioned at the last upon meeting before the form went out, about the powerhouse roof repair would require the outage for about 6.5 weeks from August 5th through September 19th. And the outage is going to be basically for 13.5 hours per day during that period. And so it'd be from, based on the feedback I got from folks, from my pump folks, what we decided to do was to go with waiting until 9:30 in the morning to shut the units off. And that way that would help with the have the units on for adult fish attraction, fish ladders. And then the outage would continue to till 11 at night. And the actual shift work would be 10 hours with half an hour left for the crew. Then the other 3 hours for the outage is required to place the clearances and take them off and all that each day. So then at night you have the units operating for a power generation or juvenile attraction to the bypass. And you still have a normal fish transportation going on, normal sampling, so forth. So, any questions about that?
What's the dates of operation?
It's August 5th through September 19th. And one thing that...
2 days of July.
Yeah, it's actually 2 days of July for the moisture survey. And that's July 15th and
16th.
And that'd be the same hours as the regular roof repair. And then from the period from August 12th to the 16th, there's also global testing going on, and that was previously approved through the coordination process in Appendix A. So that's going to be a 6 in the morning. So what that effectively does is extends that outage for those days to 6 in the morning.
Frank Loach
has joined the conference.
11 at night.
So would it be possible to, during that period, to do 24-hour day work and shorten the overall outage?
Well, it's not 24 hours, it's out.
No, could we go to 24 hours of that period? Because you're already going to have, 3 hours of clearance? I mean, what do you run for an hour?
Well, it'd be from 6 in the morning to 11 at night with the outage would be. And so maybe I'll understand your question.
Well, if you just went to 24 hours a day, say that 3 hours of clearance, hanging and unhanging, and you could just work through it. And so every day you're gaining 3 hours.
Well, I mean, for the whole period?
So if you just go to 100%.
Or August 12th to 16th is what I heard him ask.
Yeah, you could
say that. So you had a double testing going. Could you ask the PM to see whether they could do 24-hour a day work to try to get maybe finished earlier?
It would cost more money because we asked the same question. We said, hey, could you push back your start time to say like around 10 or 10:30 so we have most of the morning and that, and we were told that it was going to cost extra funds.
Well, you got 9:30, so it did
get pushed back some.
Not for the double
testing? Yeah, the double testing was already
But would you guys oppose to just going to a 24-hour day? That's normally what we were doing in the past with 24.
I don't know, that can be a, Ken, why don't you have that as a fall follow out and then let folks know, go back to the PM.
Transporting fish from Granite. That's the only downside. And I guess the question would be, does NOAA care if we're not going to transport any 7-year-olds? They used to.
Also, you would have your units operating for dual traction in that period if you're around 24 hours.
That is the downside. That's easy thinking.
Right, that was the discussion at the last meeting. Although McNary is the one location where we have generally more than 300 fish every other day when we sample all through the spill season, when we are running the units. No, McNary, because we have the Columbia River fish coming in, so even after the snake is done, we still have fish.
So one of those days, so if you went to 24 hours working all the way through, when would you start, when would you stop? You still start with and then you get done, maybe by the end of August, you might gain 6-7 days?
Yeah, maybe instead of September 19th, maybe be, I don't really know, but say maybe a week earlier or something.
Let's take a look at that, because I didn't even match that up with the adult passage time, because 12 centimeters and starting to come through in September.
Right.
So the question is like,
is it better to speed it up and have it sooner available for adult passage and give up on maybe 24 hours a day during the end of the juvenile beginning?
I would see some days. So yeah, I mean, if only gain 5-6 days, that may not be worth it, but if you gain 2 weeks, that might be. Then I see like travel time and all those fun issues.
Hasn't been let, this contract hasn't been let, is it still time for negotiating?
That's
this?
What I was going to say, was
too late.
They're going to let the contract out tomorrow.
Never mind.
Okay. Okay, so then we get into a mod and the cost, et cetera. I'm not sure. I don't think we should go that route. Okay, so we made some progress. They were able to back this up until kind of mid-morning, if you will. 9:30 is almost mid-morning compared to where they were going to start last time. So that was a concession to try to meet the adult passage concerns.
They need to run anything for station power?
Yeah, unit 5 would probably the one, or it could also be unit 6. And they would
speed no load.
Speed no load. And then twice a day, you have the switch power feed for the station service. So it'd be like a 5-minute outage up to the fish pumps twice a day. So pretty minor.
Okay.
Also, I should mention that for the duration of the roof repair, you will monitor the adult passage numbers, and for some reason we think there's a delay in fish entering the ladder. We could maybe look at doing some in-season coordination of the scope pattern. You know, maybe get a little switch in and see if that helps the adult crash in there.
I mean, the biggie will be to watch the balance. You know, with having spill going on and no powerhouse, you potentially could see a shift where we generally are having, you know, closer to 60% of the fish on the south shore ladder. We might see that higher percentage over on the north shore just due to the spill. So as long as we're still seeing what we've seen in the past in terms of averages, I think, you know, we could probably say that we have a situation that's functional this year. We, the Corps, could probably say that. Gary's looking at the sky, so I'm not sure Gary will say that.
Well, we've got experience at Little Goose Tail Race with passage delays, and experience with spotting that as count numbers build up. So I think we can watch it. What's going on at Granite? The Corps can watch it, and if we see some signs, I don't think some tweaking of the spill pattern might help. The spill pattern was developed for both juveniles and adults, as it is. But maybe we put a little more spill over at Bay 8 for adult attraction.
It's getting a little late for a lot of juveniles, but you probably have those clear water fish coming out at that time, so.
Well,
you want to be careful with that.
I know where that's from.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there'll be a switch because, you know, historically, those clearwater fish were coming through when we had no spill operations, and they were the undetected fish that always returned at a higher rate. Now we'll be putting them through spill, which everyone feels is better, and I guess we'll see whether, in fact, the data proves itself out in terms of whether the undetected fish do return at that higher rate still. That will be our comment on it.
They might have a 12-hour delay in the tail race, because there will be, when you shut off the powerhouse, for those 12 or 13 hours, you're going to have a reverse eddy in front of the powerhouse, moving upstream to the powerhouse on the south shore. So the fish, those fish that are going through our prime route, the RSW route, some of that water is going to curl around and go upstream during the daytime.
Yep.
And so, but when we go to the nighttime operation in the powerhouse, that should get flushed out, that eddy, and fish move downstream.
Which means, you switch out early in the morning and you really should get that push back through, because that's a lot of that change in operations was a little bit of where we went with some of our discussions here last year for Little Goose, was, hey, if we can change operations early in the day, just at sunup, irregardless of how we change them and break up that eddy, that may be what we need to do to just reinitiate adult movement.
Yes.
Okay.
What I was wondering about was how many radio tagged adults we might actually have up there at that time. It's a little late, but the Bonneville tagged fish would be getting up there about then. So you may have some RT fish. That's why I was looking at the ceiling. That's why I remember how many.
I hope we do.
You might be able to look at that and get some specific approach information.
That's usually after the fact, though. Okay. I mean, the information from that is after the fact.
Yeah, it's
too late. But it'll be real helpful looking at it after the fact.
It's a good test.
Yeah. I hope they tag a few more fish because we're going to have this incident at Brandon to see what happens.
This is Carl. I'm going to have to cut out. I don't see anything from McNary on that. I got two meetings I got to get to.
Thanks, Carl.
Hey, Carl, I do have one for you.
Oh, wait a minute. Scott's got a question, Carl.
Carl, do you know if you'll be cleaning your screens on July 8th through the 11th?
I have to go back and look at the schedule. We've got them set up for every month.
Well, the reason I'm asking is we're trying to do one unit at a time to do the RAS testing. So it might make sense to do the screen cleaning and the RAS testing at the same time if you're taking them out of service.
It's come out anyways.
Right.
So maybe you could check with Tim, Carl, and let me know whether or not you could do, you know, put that on the schedule to do it the 8th through the 11th for the month of the July so that you would coincide with the BPA RAS testing.
So it's July 8th through 11th?
Yes.
Okay. I'm pretty sure we can accommodate, but I'm going to check you back to you, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Carl Duggar, McNary Dam.
Has left the conference.
Okay, we still have a couple more. I think these will go a little faster. Lower Granite ADCP data collection. I think, Noah, you want to give a brief update, Ken? We still have one occurrence that needs to take place. The kick out is that 50, I believe. It's the 50. Or is it the 75 KCFS that still needs to be done?
No, 75. They're currently going for tomorrow, but it's not in the flow to get that in the spill. So, but they did last week and the fourth, they did do the 55 KCFS in the spill.
And they didn't have to, we did run that by TMT just in the event that we had to exceed MOC to be able to provide that flow, but they actually stayed within the 1 foot range. And so the flows were really perfect. Like, yeah, they cooperated.
And you got the 55 without spill too?
It was, yes.
Yeah, both? Cool.
Yeah.
Yep, we did that before spill.
Yeah, before spill.
Yeah, right. So we've got 30K. The ones that are completed are 30K no spill, 50K no spill, and 55 with spill. Yeah. So we still have
75 with and without. With and without.
And
without.
Then 120 with. If we get it.
I'd be surprised if you get 120 this year.
Yeah. If they're there, we'll get it.
Will units take front?
Okay, let's go to Lower Granite Gatewell Overflow Weir Enlarged Orifice Biological Evaluation Update. I believe that, Ken, did you send out an email to folks, or what communication did you have? One of the premises for this is that either yesterday or the day before yesterday, we in Ops got an email from Mike Halter alerting us that for some of the planned research needs, he was being asked to go from a 1% sample rate to a 25% sample rate to accommodate the fish needs. So that was a red flag for Mike. And excuse me, does somebody want to say something?
Oh, yeah, this is Dave Trachtenberg. I don't know if you want me to talk to any of it as well.
Well, I was just giving the intro, and we will give you the opportunity to talk about your studies as appropriate. That being said, I guess I believe, you know, why don't you, since you handled it, let us know kind of what you got from input and or what's appropriate to hear from Dave. Do we want Dave to outline why his series of research projects has this need at this point in time? It sounds a little bit like study designs didn't really consider how fish runs temporally move through the system, and so they built study designs looking for numbers of fish that aren't normally in the system in that quantity at this point in time. And so I guess that's why it was a red flag to ops, and perhaps it is an appropriate time for you to make some comments, Dave.
Well, let me add a few things here. Yeah, we built the study design essentially hoping that fish may be there, but fully recognize at this point that, you know, steelhead numbers, as you just said, aren't there yet. So, no, I mean, we're not actually asking Fred to go from a 1% sample to a 25% sample. We recognize that is a realistic request, as you were just talking about, essentially the numbers that I would put onto the SMT sample. So no, we're going to work closer with Fred and maybe go to like 2% or a 4% sample. I know we've been working with Fred here, the guys out at Granite, Blue Leaf and UC Davis have been working with what's a more realistic sample. But yeah, no, we essentially can modify our study design as we go based on numbers we're actually getting. So no, we will essentially be able to catch up this later in the season once you let numbers come up and not be trying to go to 25% sample yet when that's not appropriate.
Okay, so I guess, does anybody want to comment on what the upper level of fish being handled at the facility for research on a daily basis that they would find as a red flag? So obviously 25% was way too high. I'm not seeing anybody with 2 to 4% jumping out of their seat saying, oh, no, that's unreasonable. Everybody seems to think that maybe that's within the ballpark, but, you know, they're looking, I mean, on a perfect day, you would like something like 375 steelhead and yeah, similar amount of Chinook?
Yeah, so ideal is 375 steelhead and Chinook, which should be achievable more realistically here starting May 1. The other note is that starting May 1, when Doug Marsh starts transporting in-river studies, we'll be able to, we're going to work with Doug as well, so we'll be able to get fish from both Fred from the SMT sample and from Doug's crews to help take some of the stress off of, or potential for, to keep Fred's sample rate down a little bit. So kind of a bigger issue in the next, say, now until May 1, when SMT samples are the only source of fish at Granite. And, yeah, but otherwise, yeah, since we're looking for 375 a day, from UC Davis on my great there, Frank.
Yeah, just a quick point of clarification. The most recent detailed study plan has us collecting 125 fish a day, 125 steelhead and 125 either yearling Chinook or sub-yearling Chinook. So,
oh, sorry, I had my numbers wrong.
Okay, so that's a little bit more reasonable for late April, probably, than the 375 was.
Hey, Ann, just suggest, this is pretty simple, before they start upping the sample rate, that to see in the sample that there's an obvious increase in steelhead in the 1% sample
Before they go from 2 to 4, that they would look that between 1 and 2, there really had been an increase in steelhead.
Yeah.
Do you guys understand that?
Don't jump up until you see that a bunch of hatchery steelhead has arrived at the project and are available there. Because, I mean, I was just started looking at their permit, their handling permit, and there is some guidelines there that if they go too much, too early of increasing the sample and handling more and more fish, they're gonna exceed their quota before the study's over, and then we're gonna have to go through the paperwork again of people agreeing to increasing that. So they gotta go slow.
Yeah. One other thing you might keep in mind: Dworshak Fish Hatchery is just this week starting their releases, so you know that's a total of 2.1 million smolts that go from the Clearwater, and so it'll probably be about a week out, you know, and you'll start seeing some of those steelhead there. So your steelhead numbers will jump, probably, you know, due to that. I'm not aware of some of the other things that might be coming out of the Salmon River and or the ODFW facilities in the Grand Ronde, but in general here, as you go into mid-April, you start to have the acclimation ponds releasing fair amounts of steelhead. So I would think that even though the peak is generally not until early in May for steelhead, usually around the end of that first or second week, that we ought to be starting to see adequate numbers for you to meet 125 fish a day here probably by next week.
Yeah, so that was our hope. Essentially, we have our first collection day for the sample is scheduled to be Saturday. Our hope is, by next week or the week after, we're able to hit those sample numbers more realistically. So, everything you're talking about, Ed, should work for us, no problem. We can work with that within our study design.
Okay. So I think we have a path forward. Did you guys understand Bill's comment as well, where he was kind of asking, as you work with Fred on the fish that are going into the through the SMP sample prior to working with Doug Marsh, that you kind of watch that adjustment between. So you watch what you gain between one and two, and you know, if you didn't get the increase in the other species by going one to two, don't go ahead and jump to four at this point. Maybe wait a week and see if we don't just have them coming because they've been released.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That
okay.
works for us.
Okay.
No. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, hopefully by May 1st, we're going to be with all the hatchery releases, be seeing them anyway, so that works for us.
Okay. Is there any other comments or issues related to that?
Not that. I have some other study issues and granted JFF stuff I'd like to talk about here on if people are ready to move on.
Okay. Go ahead.
So, okay, one issue that Greg asked me to just clarify with the group. So what's in Appendix A for the study for turbine operations, so the prototype overflow meter and gate wells in 5A, as folks know, what's in Appendix A states essentially we are anticipating essentially a study design 6 days a week for running the unit five as second priority, still keeping unit two as first priority for adult traction flow. If people don't have a problem with it, we'd like to just keep run the unit five as second priority as described in Appendix A for 7 days a week in case there's any fish essentially on Sundays that are taking longer to exit the well, just so we get the tail end fish numbers, so people don't have a problem with that. The draft teletype that Lisa typed up essentially it was going to be for 7 days a week instead of six. Just wanted to bring that up and see if people had any issues with that.
Okay, I don't see anybody jumping out of their seats saying no, and I see a couple nods, so it sounds like that would be acceptable.
Okay, great. No. Great.
Thanks, no. Dave. I'll send that teletype out probably
okay,
tomorrow.
Great. Thank you. And then essentially the next issue here that we want to talk about, essentially, I don't know, Ken, you might want to pull up some of the pictures and whatnot where. So I guess a little background here with the 14-inch orifice, with the current collection channels, the way that
participant has joined the conference.
The way that Brandon and Mike Coulter have run the collection channel, and the historically, as they've kept water levels in the collection channel on the higher side, the hydraulic design for the 14-inch orifice, as part of the phase one upgrade, we actually need to run the collection channel at a slightly lower elevation. Now that we're actually been able to run the 14-inch orifice a couple times here now, actually with screens, and, or actually screens that are going on five, so I'm coming back online today. Now that we're actually at operations and bulkheads and everything about, we are finding that the 14-inch orifice, when the collection channels operated on the higher end, was actually striking a crossbeam for the walkway. So we, Mike and I and a few folks in-house have been working essentially where we want to run that collection channel lower to be able to keep fish from, or the 14-inch jet from impacting that beam or splashing through the walkway grating. So we worked with Mike earlier this week to figure out where we could run the channel at the lower end. We thought we had found happy medium for operation of the 10-inch orifices and the 14-inch orifice. One issue Mike Coulter and Ryan Bush has called Derek and I this morning, they're having some issues actually maintaining the proposed channel elevation that we want to maintain at. So I guess that's one caveat here is we're scrambling here to try to figure out if we can install a newer PLC to actually regulate the flows at the desired level. Otherwise, we may have to figure out how else we can operate that 14-inch orifice and regulate the channel at an acceptable level. I guess more to come on that. We'll probably send out I'll work with Ken, we'll probably send out a MLC or MFR describing this issue for folks and how we propose on resolving this, maintaining a stable operation here as soon as we have an actual proposal this afternoon. But in the meantime, I'd at least like to run through what ideal operation we would like to maintain the channel at. The issue we're having, big picture, is that what the fish passage plan says for operation of collection channels, the 10-inch orifices could impact the collection channel no closer than 3 feet to the back wall. There's a couple units, like, closer down to, like, units 1, 2, and 3, especially if there's no unit drawdown, that are impacting more like 1 to 2 feet from the back wall. Things are looking okay to us from so far from where they're actually impacting. Ken, do you want, are you able to pull up any of those pictures or videos?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he is.
I'm going to show the 10-inch orifice in 5A. This one looks good here.
Okay, yeah, do you guys have a web meeting or anything going there?
No, we don't. Okay. Why don't you tell them which video you're showing, Ken?
This is the 10-inch orifice in 5A, so this one, I think the water's actually a little bit higher here.
Okay, so yeah, so essentially, if you're showing the video of 5A where it's half submerged, that's kind of that's the upper end of the proposed operation range for what we'd like to operate at. That's essentially what, that's the, kind of the upper end of the hydraulic design for post phase 1A construction.
Okay.
You go to the operation, the video for 6A, that is what 6A is looking like at the lower end of the juvenile collection, at the lower end of the operating range, which that one is still meeting criteria. Essentially, if you, the 3 feet from the center of the jet line is impacting the middle of the collection channel. It's a 6-foot wide channel, so it's 3 feet from the wall if you're measuring from the center of the jet. And so that one is looking really good, at least in my opinion it is. But when you get down, say what we are noticing, I could get a good image, as you can see in that video, because of the weird cutouts, I can get a good video of 5 and 6. I couldn't get a very good video of unit 1 or 2, just couldn't get a good video or pictures through the gate well for folks. But on Tuesday, unit 2 actually was looking good, but unit 2 was running, so you had some drawdown in the gate well, obviously. But say unit 1 that was off, but Mike still tries to keep gate well orifices open, even if the units are off, just in case there are any fish in there. So like unit 1 was, because there was no drawdown or anything in the gate well, was impacting closer than 3 feet to that back wall. Frank Menzik is watching SMP samples very closely. So far, at least as of Monday and Tuesday, samples haven't seen any increased descaling or injury rates. Monday's descaling was, I think, 3 fish, like 1.4%. Tuesday, I think he must have had 4 fish, 1.9%. So nothing that was alarming him or elevated. But he is watching very closely to see if this change in operating lower has any issues, but wanted to bring it up here to see if people had any folks with us essentially for the bio eval, at least now through the end of June, had any issues with operating the collection channel in this slightly modified way to try to be in a happy medium between the 10-inch and 14-inch orifices. Obviously, when we mine the entire collection channel of the 9 feet width and 1A, we'll be able to hit that 4 foot from the back wall, and not 3 foot from the back wall, and usually be at 4 feet or more from the back wall, usually 14-inch orifices, for all orifices under all four-way operations.
So how long will you be evaluating this research-wise within fish passage season then, I guess is the question?
April 15th through the end of June, through June 30th, is the 29th is our last fish release, proposed fish releases.
So at that point in time, starting after once they're done with research, will we go? Where are we suggesting we go? Will we just go to orifice flow?
I'm open to any thoughts. My initial suggestion would be let's wait a month or two here and see how study results come out from initial data comes out from the bioeval and see how things are looking, and to be able to make a better informed decision here at next month or the following month's FPAW meeting.
Okay, if you're able to get your data in a timely manner, that's great.
Yeah.
I wasn't anticipating that, so that's fine.
Yeah, I should have enough data in hand by at least the June meeting to preliminary data, but I've asked the UCD of Espiritu to be working up as much data as they can in season such, and hopefully by the June meeting we can have an informed discussion on how things are, what the data is looking like, and how we want to operate for the rest of the season, whether that's the overflow just around 24/7, or if we want to run the 10 into orifice, if we have issues we got to resolve. If that's the 14 by June, we should be able to have that.
Okay, we'll put that on the agenda, that we'll expect an update in June then on preliminary results.
Fair enough, sounds good, and I'm happy if you want a May update too. I'm happy to give an update in May as well.
Okay, see if you start to see something that you think would be of interest, let us know.
Yeah, of course. And like I said, we're having some issues with the, it's not a PLC unit, it's a physical, it's a it's a main electronic control system that runs the water control system for the water makeup valves that we're struggling, or that Mike and the electrician that ran it are struggling with a little bit today. So Ken and I will need a follow-up this afternoon or tomorrow with folks with FPOM on how we anticipate resolving that issue so that we can maintain the channel long-term in the way that you guys are seeing there in the videos.
Okay, I think Bill Hublin had a comment.
Well, yeah, I wanted to see a follow-up, and that's David answered my question.
Okay.
And then also, I think a longer discussion about this at Fitterwig in a couple of weeks would be helpful.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we will. No. Yeah, and Fitterwig at the end of the month, I should have some initial data and whatnot to share as well, and at least preliminary initial results in the first couple of weeks of tagging. And so, yeah, no, I will. We're at least at this point flagging at least a half a day for Fitterwig at the end of the month on Thursday.
Okay, thanks, Dave.
Yeah, no problem.
Dave?
So I got a question for the group, and something I never even thought of before. And I was looking, I heard it mentioned that the criteria was supposed to be 3 feet from the wall.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah,
I don't see that.
Yeah, there's guys. The same plan says the orifice jet should impact the.
Is it?
Probably have 3 feet from the wall on the full channel.
Yeah. Okay. And it's measured from the center of the stream. The center of the jet.
Yeah, I believe my understanding was. Well, anybody else that has a different.
How is it written in the FPP? Is what he's questioning.
Do you know what page is that?
Okay, I'm looking for my notes. I actually have the line in the fish passage plan for Granite, at least I haven't cross-checked for other projects, but Granite, the language states, orifice jets hitting no closer than 3 feet from the back wall, collection channel full. That is the statement.
What page is that?
I can pull it up here and look.
Well, okay.
I can tell you for... To my understanding is that essentially from the center line of the jet, what we're designing for phase one, when we upgrade the collection channel, we're essentially trying to be a little more conservative and say 4 feet measured from the center line of the jet, 4 feet from the back wall at minimum is what we're designing towards for phase one for when we line the channel 9 feet.
Okay.
So we're trying to be a little more conservative.
Okay.
I'll find it. Thanks.
We're going to page 11, number 4.
This is Fred Benesick. I'd just like a definition for channel full.
Oh, yes. Thanks, Fred. Circle back to that.
You need a definition for channel full?
Well, that's what you have in the FPP. The FPP says orifice jets hitting no closer than 3 foot from back wall, collection channel full.
Right now, the channel is running 2 feet lower than we were running it in order to operate the 14-inch orifice.
Yep.
Part of the problem is maintaining the gallery because the submariner tech ran up there, found a vortex running at the exit of the channel.
Awesome.
Air, so we opened up another 10-inch. We can't afford to do that because when that burps down here at the upwell, it's pretty big. So it's a real tough game keeping the 14-inch orifice from floating into that I-beam, keeping the channel low enough so it doesn't do that, but high enough so we don't suck air into the pipe system.
Yeah. You take up the IV?
Not this season.
Yeah, so that's 727 and 3/4 plus or minus 6 inches that we think is the happy medium between those two conditions that Fred just described. But what we're, based on what we, the issues in the project we've seen last night, we're trying to figure out if we can actually maintain that long term, or if we need to put, say, somebody in the collection channel to run the system and manual for the duration of the study. Hopefully not. Hopefully we can come up with an electronic system to do it. That's what Ken and I will follow up with FPOM here once we have a proposed solution on how to maintain that.
So, hey, Dan, you thought about taking the walkway out right there or raising it?
That is something that we need to look at for phase one. That's likely not a feasible, well, trying to do something in season here would be have bigger issues. The challenge there is it's already pretty tight. You need to need that walkway access already, or you need that access because you only have one access, easy access into the collection channel from the downstream side. So if you take that out, you wouldn't have any access to the upper part of the channel easily. So you'd have to access from the upper collection channel, which isn't an easy access.
They have to crawl, not walk. But
yeah. So yeah, I mean, we're definitely work.
We'll reduce the ability to do maintenance as needed on lights and plugs or anything that might happen in six.
Maybe. And I'm not sure that we structurally. I don't see the issue is the IED more than the walkway. And if we remove that IED, I don't think that there's any way to remove that IED in season without you'd end up doing in water work and wouldn't be very conducive. We'd end up like losing the handrail and whatnot to go that keep safety wise keeps people out of the overflow weir.
As well as chunks of concrete, etc., in there when you've got fish kind of moving around.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about you building one across the top and then crank the one below up to it and raise it out of the way for now. It would narrow it, but you guys are
cool. Yeah, One option we may have is to, this season, it may be easier for us to quickly manufacture a mitered bend for the 14-inch orifice, similar to what the 10-inch orifices have, to angle the jet down a little bit. That is one thing we were talking about this morning. There's a potential option that may be easier, say, than trying to raise the actual walkway grading in season.
It was an aggressive try to get something again. I think this first year, knowing that they'd already lost a unit, I think you did have those discussions whether or not it was worth going ahead.
Yeah, was that Gary talking? I couldn't hear the question.
David. That's just that you don't want to change the study conditions. If you're studying this, you don't want something that's not normal.
Unless you really intend to do that.
The collection channels elevate, the water surface elevations in the collection channel are very similar to what we'll see post phase one construction. They're just a little bit lower than, probably 6 inches lower than what they'll be running for phase one, but not dramatically lower. Essentially, and I've been up with Mike here this week a couple times looking at the collection channel. The orifice jets, the 10 inches have actually generally been more than half submerged, which probably means they've been running that water elevation higher than they should have been. Granted, the issue that Granite has is that with the water control systems, they do normally see at least a 1 foot. There are 6-inch plus or minus either direction swing because it can take the water makeup valves a half an hour to account for, say, 4-bay or 8-well fluctuations head coming in on the 10-inch orifices. So that's a challenge we're having as we're trying to bring the water surface elevation down to John Reynolds' hydraulic design for this channel. That's what we're struggling with, is how to maintain it at that slightly lower elevation.
In the future, you were talking, at least on Monday, about potentially narrowing that walkway up to just a few feet off of the west wall there.
Yeah, so that's that's definitely an option for phase one. No, that's not, like I was saying, it's not feasible easily to do in season here.
No, but I'm just thinking that down the road, if that's where you're going, you don't want to test something that's too unusual. So you really want to maintain as best as possible the conditions that you would see down the road. And so you're really going to have to thread the needle on this.
Yeah, the challenge that we have there is really, not very much. I mean, I fully agree with you that we're really trying to walk a fine line here. In reality, the collection channel operations are going to change. We're really, at this point, we're really testing the gate whale side and entrance into the collection channel.
So what is he asking F-pond for?
Go from,
if not, this is the thinner wig issue.
I hear you.
Open channel, primary water, you know, you've totally changed that. We're not, you know, we're not testing that.
So we need to get back on track here, Dave. We're getting a lot into study design. That's something that's more of a fitter wig issue. So how about for operations, you go ahead and get out, as you've talked, when you decide what the path forward is, a coordination form that can be circulated to update folks, continue to work with Ken on that. And then in terms of experimental design and some of those issues, work those through the standard forums that you guys normally do. And I think this accentuates the need that we've talked, that I talked with Marvin about 6 weeks ago, about you guys having another additional form similar to what we have for FPOM, where you can do something similar to what we do with FPOM and get that data out for people to review and then be prepared for, say, your Fitterwig meeting to have some comments and discussion.
Yeah, I just heard that the other day, so we will I'll talk to Marvin about that more big picture, but
Okay, thank you. So let's keep moving. We still have a couple more things. We have two on Lomo.
Can I ask one quick question?
Oh, sorry.
I thought I heard a comment that if the collection channel gets too low, some pipe sucks air.
There's air being pulled.
Air being trained.
Yeah.
The downwell.
Yeah.
I think they're talking about the downwell at the end of the collection channel.
Well, starts water hammer.
Not enough water, it starts sucking air.
Okay.
Looks poor for fish.
At the downwell end. Okay.
We try to avoid that.
That's why we're trying to keep the collection channel high enough to avoid that. That's where they were struggling initially.
So that's where hopefully with the coordination form on how we're going to operate comes out will be a methodology, hopefully, where that won't occur. And so that's what we'll be providing people here in the next day or two or early next week.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. So if nobody has any other comments, we'll move into Lomo. There's two forms, one I believe got sent out and one that I just passed out.
Frank Loge.
Ken, do you want to cover the one on the outfall pipe?
Yeah, actually this is distributed on the email, so I'll go ahead and pass it off.
Oh, okay. Well, if you didn't pass that out, maybe I did pass the other one out. And while this one's going around, we'll talk. I had a request yesterday from the project, and they wrote up the form that I just passed around, and that was for Unit 1 to change the priority. And that's largely based on the fact that Unit 1, fixed blade, they're finding that some of the lubrication that would normally take place when you're running it is not occurring, that there's an increased probability of leaking oil at blade seals, and they're asking to change kind of the criteria that we currently have in the fish passage plan from 70 to 100 kcfs, and that would change that priority for Unit 1. It would give some relief for the amount of runtime for Unit 1. Basically, when they reviewed fish passage, and I think you'll see it, that people don't have to read it right now, but we had been using Unit 2 as a traction flow in other years, when depending on flow, and so we don't really see this as something that's going to disrupt adult passage. And so in the interest of trying to keep the plant functional, that's why this request is here.
So, and why is it flow-based and not just unit per?
Well, that's interesting because I think it could be unit priority if we wanted.
If other units aren't available, you may not get to 100 before you need to turn this unit off. That's why I'm bringing it up.
So your suggestion would be, why not just change unit priority that one is always last on and first off?
Yeah.
Does anybody else have a problem with that?
I would just ask some others, Bill and Tom, if they do feel that unit two is just as good as unit one for zone traction.
It's not just as good, but the question is, what's the level of impact? Is that going to be worse than having oil and tail race? I don't know. As long as you have good traction, I'm not sure. One's better, but two might be adequate.
This is the way it's written now. You have to wait till your flow gets to 100 before you turn unit one on?
Yes. Which means you're probably not going to get there this year based on what you told us earlier.
It might be.
You might get there for a couple of days.
Right, but it also might be that you don't have flows of 100, but you have two of the units out, so you're going to have to spill larger amounts because it's not 100 to turn the unit on. It should be you just continue down the list of available units.
Okay, I can take that feedback back and ask that to be rewritten. I mean, in terms of big picture.
I mean, we understand why you're doing this, what in, but it's what order you're doing.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. So that's it for that one. Can everybody can live with what Scott's recommending? This would be through 2015 is when this unit is going out for service. So, yes.
But what is it Scott's recommending that's different?
He's recommending that rather than be based on a flow level, that we change the unit priority, that unit one is last on. So that in the case that we're in the middle of the summer and we've got two or three units out and we're not at 100 KCFS, that we could still turn unit one on if needed. So what it does is when it's flow based, I think what he was seeing is, you know, there's a lot of things going on at powerhouses where you have a couple of units out here and there. You might be at a point where, you know, technically you should be using unit one, but now we've just written into the fish passage plan a constraint which is going to keep them from using it.
Okay.
Whereas he saw if you just had it as a unit priority change, when you have those special circumstances for a week or 10 days or whatever it may be, you still could pull that unit on without coordination.
Yeah.
I think we're done with that one.
It would still be in that 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
One,
and the condition for one would be to last on,
first off,
yeah.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Until 2016.
And, hey, yep. This Russ?
Yes.
And, you know, luckily we're doing the adult pathy study this year as well in the snake, and so that should help us identify if we're having an adult attraction problem there as well. And just, I'm sure everyone recognizes if we see an adult passage problem or a juvenile passage problem because of this, we want to re-engage and see if another option would be better.
Sure, that's fine. It's kind of interesting that you bring that up. I'm trying to move a little fast here, but
sure.
Back when I first came to the Corps, there was this myth that if there was a eddy below the powerhouse at Lomo, adult passage would be impacted. And so when we first started doing the testing for where the RSW should go, whether it should be in 7 or 8, you know, the first thing that we noticed was there was going to be this huge eddy below the powerhouse. And we never have been able to detect, to my knowledge, in this time frame that started roughly in 2004 or 5, that we have, you know, issues with adult passage on that north ladder, even when we have big eddies. Our juvenile survival was higher, even when we had the big eddy. That was also a concern with the RSW. And so I guess I feel fairly good that we're not likely to have an issue here. But certainly if we do, yes, we need to talk about it and see if we can make adjustments.
Sure. And I'm not saying we're likely going to have a problem. I'm just saying that
you can get surprised.
We just have an advantage this year that we have a better opportunity to look at it just in case.
And it's a low, you know, it's an average flow year, you know, and you bet. If we start seeing something let's bring it to our attention and see what we can do.
Sure, thanks.
That, Ken, you want to finish up the outfall pipe?
Yeah, low mung metal hydro cannon at the end of the outfall there. Last winter, there was some freeze damage in the line that feeds the pump, the pump that pumps the water up. Apparently, they didn't put the drain holes when it was installed. There were no drain holes at the end of it. There's a drain line, but it's a little further down down in the line, I guess. It didn't do any good in that particular spot. So it was freeze damage, and now they've been trying to fix it, and they've assessed that what it's made out of is metal, and it would be hard to get the parts because it require reshaping the metal to fit. So what they're going to do is purchase a PVC instead, use a coupling, and they would like to do this next week on Tuesday. And what it would require would be outage of the spillway for safety, because it has to have a boat in the water. So it would be approximately 9-hour outage of the spillway. That's the issue, and that's a big request.
So,
yeah, I mean, my understanding of the bypass is that it's outside our project influence, and that's what we've been told time and again every time we look at this bolt versus uniform spill issue. It's like, oh, well, it's outside our project influence, and understanding that, the spill should have an effect on it.
Yeah, it's coming from the project, so.
I guess, you know, you have to think
of a wave training.
Boating safety issues in terms of fixed devices, and especially if you have to be on the upstream side of that, the likelihood of rolling a boat and things like that could be fairly high depending on how that's balancing off the pipe. So its safety is the main reason they're asking for the outage. So I think the issue here is how critical is it to get this pipe fixed before we have a lot of predators potentially. We have seen increasing amounts of avian at Lomo. And is there, you know, what can we do in order, you know, what, let's talk about, you know, number one, it's assumed that everybody really does want to have it fixed. We're getting the looks around the room that everybody's not too happy about the request to shut off spill for 8 hours. So, and that's not surprising. I guess
there's two options you could do. Take a look at. You could take a look at turning off your RSW and take a look and see how that would work, because that would reduce. Because if you take that and go to a uniform pattern, that's going to put a lot less big waves in there, and you might be able to sneak that in. Dave Benner, Ben Player yesterday, said the other option is if you do have to shut off spill is go to the uniform pattern afterwards for the rest of the day to help, because with the uniform pattern you'll be able to spill a little bit more to help get you more towards the day average of spill where you would have been. Would be the other possible option.
So that'd be something to work with BPA on, whether or not we could make up with a uniform pattern what we missed for that 8 hours. Does that seem like it would fit in with operations?
You're requesting 9 hours.
Yeah, he's requesting 9 minutes.
Yeah, we've got power self clearances. So.
Yeah.
I think your support is 9 hours.
Something
we can look into.
Sure. Sorry. I got a question here. So, Ken,
yeah, this is Russ, and on this, you know, I'm not a big one for counting molecules of water, make sure they go the right route, but it's for fish passage, and I think with this one, the reasonable solution would be that after we're done, to switch to the uniform pattern and just run that until we do get caught up on spill, and that'll keep everyone in the region happy. I think that'd be the best plan. I prefer that to shutting off the RSW and still spilling the same amount but less effectively. Because my goal is to move the fish effectively and not just spill the same amount. So I think we can accomplish both, spill the same amount and move about as many fish by switching to the uniform pattern after we're done and just running that until we make it up. Whether it takes us 8 hours or a day and a half, whatever, just run that until we get caught up.
Russ, what would be what would be your preferred option? No RSW, and spill when they do that, or do the no spill and then the uniform. If you keep spill going during their time, but just at a reduced level without the TS, with the RSW, that which option would you think would you want to go with?
Yeah, that's the two. That is a good question. And, you know, because once again, I'm trying to figure out which one gets the fish through non-powerhouse route the best. And I see your point there, Tom, is that, you know, during that 8 hours, we're going to be doing that anyway. If we're still in the same amount but without the RSW, we will spill less fish, but still be spilling the fish passing at that time if we can pull that off. Versus if we
has left the conference.
Switch to the uniform pattern, that means that during that 8 hours or whatever, we'll be not spilling any fish. But then for a while afterwards, we'll be spilling more than we would. I'm not quite sure which one would pencil out the most.
Going with Tom's first idea is going to be the best for fish because
that's what I've been thinking about.
If you're going to shut it off, yeah, holding it up in 4 days, I think the worst thing you can do.
Well, honestly, the level of that spill, if we're spilling
26
spread across,
I can't imagine if that's a project.
And that
far downstream, you can't.
And at this time of year, when the flows are at, it's still a fairly high percentage. So, I mean, the only species you'd be worried about would be Stree Chinook.
Right, and they'll go through
the volume. So,
like steelhead issues.
Honestly, that's what I'd ask first. Like, say, hey, try if you don't have the RSW running, is that going to be good enough?
Yeah, I'd be up for a pattern change more than just shutting completely off and delaying
the fish. So, do you want to do a safety issue? You're right, get that.
Well, if you want to do a pattern change...
2 miles first. Down from the project. You're outside the BRZ.
Guarantee you.
But really, is it worth thinking of having to do a pattern change now, see what it looks like, and then come back?
Yeah. And
I mean, do it, just look at it. We can do that for an hour.
I'm saying generically we won't do it. That's,
I mean, just...
No, I'm just...
A contractor up there, just go up
there. Not my call.
I know. That's not my either, too.
It's going to be your boat. It doesn't keep me from offering.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go is do the change, take a boat out there, see what we can do, and then make a decision.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'll be all right with that.
And
I think that's a good plan.
And also, you might want to take a look at flows. Find when your flows going to be a little less.
That'd be July.
Well, but I'm saying,
daytime.
Depends on next week. If you give
is the cannon not working at all?
It's going to be worse than
the first. Yeah, now that there's breaks in the pipe from freezing. So the. Yeah, it's not functional.
Earlier,
really?
Really? It's
not sucking water at all?
It's not what?
It's not sucking up water at all?
Or you could apparently just, there's water to the build up moss breaks in the pipe are such that, yeah, you're not shooting anything out the ends, let's put it that way.
I can load the PVC quick.
I guess you're pulling air.
Okay.
So, yeah, I guess I got an aside conversation. Our path forward is what?
Do the spill change request and see what that pattern looks like. Take a boat out there and then... make the call if you have to shut spill down or not.
So it requires to do two
prior
events.
Right. The priority is to change spill but still have spill pattern, flatten it, then get a boat out there and do the repair.
You'll have to shut the RSW and you'll have to reduce spill in bay six, which is a bulk bay.
Yep.
So you reduce spill down and the shut the RSW, reduce spill down in bay six. Spread it all out uniform.
Yep.
And then test and see if the boat tied up to the outfall pipe is okay to work with that. And if it's okay to work, then just operate that pattern for the 9 hours.
And if not, then you shut off spill, do the work, and then try to make it up with the uniform pattern until you have the same volume.
Yeah.
Definitely the least preferred option.
Okay.
Yeah. And that uniform pattern after the after it includes the RSW. It's not all uniform.
Yeah, okay.
But it doesn't have that second bulk bay, that bay six open 5 or 6 stops.
yes.
So, and the other, so after the work's done, it's if we have to go that route, it's RSW plus uniform.
Yeah.
Until we make up the volume, and then we go back to our standard bulk pattern of RSW.
RSW with big six.
And then one other thing you might do is you might grab some, since you did a bunch of performance center tests there last year, you might take a look at what bypass survival was, and take a look at what your bird activity was in that location.
Bypass survival.
Did they have a little broken out
on the
bypass?
I can't remember. Yeah.
Those
further
evaluation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, as pelicans,
they're
somewhat immune to this.
They're not going to. Yeah, that thing on that is that the bypass winding downstream of a higher velocity area, it seemed to reduce the pelican issue.
Yeah, it did.
That
I just would argue whether or not it's worth fixing versus shutting spur off.
I think he has a more sophisticated sprinkler
than just the standard like that we have at the end of McNary. I think he has kind of some dual angles to try to cover the near area by the bypass outfall as well as kind of the air, so that you have both the flight as well as just that little immediate area to give some relief just under the outfall. So,
well, the other thing is too, when do we see the height of the
ABM
activity?
May.
Yeah. So we get it done ahead of time if we were able to do it next week.
Well, that's the only question I'm going to ask. Why is this being done now? Was the system watered up in, March?
Well, they just last week found out that the outfall pipe, when they went to turn it on, after they watered up the system. So we watered up, it would have been the week that was, so March 20th, something like that. They did water up then, but you know, turning on the outfall pipe isn't the first thing you do after you water up. So I mean,
you have we got pretty good hazing contract.
You know, we have it's going to be 16-hour shifts from the peak of the.
They talked about upping that there, but it would also take away from some of the hazing in other areas, so they might need more.
Just sitting here waiting for the turn.
Compromise.
Well, if you need it, I mean, that's the question: is how many birds do we see there?
Well, I guess the other thing to consider is, do we still have performance standards this summer going on at Lomo? Yeah. So wouldn't we want to have the outfall? Wouldn't we want this sprinkler working so that we know?
Well, if it's summer, then you start getting off the hydrograph. You would have a chance there whether it's not.
Well, no, they wanted the summer test in June.
Mid-June.
Not mid.
We don't want to go there.
Brock said July 3rd.
Fix it. What he told me yesterday. Try to find a way to work around it. Yeah. So it sounds like we have a path forward here.
Ding, ding, ding. There's a path forward.
Okay.
It's got to get fixed, so.
Get ready for your head to get hit.
I think the only other thing, Ken, I don't know if you want to just mention briefly current JFF operations or not, do you? Or?
Oh, I can give a quick summary here.
Operating in criteria. Good. Let's move on.
It can be that simple. I think that John provided it with some numbers. At this point in time, it looks like there's been about 72,000 smolts that have been collected and then bypassed at Lower Granite. Sampling is twice a week at Little Goose. They've only sampled a little over 200 fish, 235, and they're every 3 days at Lower Monumental, and numbers weren't attached there, and they haven't started, obviously, at McNary because they don't have all the screens down. So, you know, that it can be that simple there. And I think the only other thing we had on there was that the Dvorak Fish Hatchery was going to be doing their out planning. We talked about that earlier. So we're probably ready to kick back to Portland updates.
Yeah. Oh, one question. Hey, if you guys do go out in a boat, let's look at that outfall. Go out there when the outfall with the RSW running is and tell me if you see any eddies out there. I'm kind of curious about that.
This is going to be out planning steelhead.
That's an issue you have with Ryan.
Release.
And Ryan's to my... I'm still not convinced because he...
You think we should make Ryan go out on the boat with Bill?
Absolutely. If Ryan gets sick, I think that's my answer.
Ryan gets sick, yeah.
He's a land lover.
He might get seasick out there.
That's my point.
But I don't know what... I don't know that I can make a promise to that. I think we can work through
what we've discussed. I'm saying if you're out there and take a look, it looks like there's an eddy there in current condition. That tells you something.
Oh, well, I don't know if I'm allowed to go to Fitterwick because I don't know if it's...
They're not their uniform. It's supposed to be.
All right, let's move on. All right, it's my turn to talk for a while.
Waiting patiently.
So I have allergies, so my voice is a little odd.
Sounds like a cigar allergy to me, bro.
Yes, well, I should probably talk like this and it'll be, who talks like that? Richie. Yeah. So updates for Portland. We're going to be pretty quick here. Ben, you can knock out your first four. Boom, do it.
Okay.
They're updates.
Down A branch. It's really still getting investigated. They hired someone else to come out and test it. Mostly because it was two guards. Wastewater treatment folks. Supposed to be getting our wastewater oil and water testing from out. We don't see, for what it's worth, any sort of pressure loss in our domestic water, so where that chlorine's coming from, I don't know. But we'll have a better idea
from the level water.
Once we get these guys out there.
Track it down.
Corner collector leak, the initial one was sealed from the inside. There was a similar one, smaller, that was upstream of that they sealed from the outside because Mark Mike was up and running, so there was more, not really a concern on anything other than appearance. There were some folks that thought it didn't look good having water coming out, so they were able to do pretty much the same fix, but on the external wall it worked, so that's gone for now.
Awesome.
It's good. It's thing.
That's what you're hot tub.
I'm not sure about the updated dewatering plans. I don't know what that's referencing actually.
Yeah, we need to. I guess, is this what you put on for me? Updated watering plans? So, just want to make sure we get all of the dewatering plans we've had in Bonneville with these special ops over the past few years, updated and captured in the fish passage plan. So, when we take down B branch, when we take down EMT downstream from Washington Shore, all that stuff. Just want to make sure we have it captured. So I'm going to be putting them on there until we get them captured. Okay. Because you know what? You might not be there for
ever.
5 years from now and all of a sudden. How did we do that? How many leaf gates did we need to put in? I just want to make sure that gets captured.
Okay. Fish counts in Washington Shore and Bradford.
Can't hear you. Talk in the mic, please. Stand up. I don't care.
Is this the Gary Fredericks topic?
There's another bond.
I brought up the TP and got chastised for it.
Spillway hoist.
But it looks like I might be right. What do you
write
about? I hate when I'm right.
Me too.
Because I'm right more than I want to be.
What are you talking about?
Washington Shore. Why aren't the spring ship using Washington?
Yeah.
How many are there?
Sean Tackley, did you call in?
No.
No? Okay, well, we've got a smelly flume out there, I guess.
That's vibrating. That's what we're hoping for.
Vibrating and changing flow dynamics? Who knows? I mean, what are we going to do about it is the question.
Are no fish going in Washington Shore?
It's about 20%.
Are you going back and forth?
It leveled out today again, so.
What are we at today?
It's not quite 50-50, but it's closer to it, much closer.
So we're hoping it was just snow.
Is it all theory right now?
I don't
think so. No, things are pretty low still, right?
Yeah, but when you got 125 going through Bradford before spill starts, you got 20 going through Washington Shore, and all the flow is almost all going through Bradford. It's not going through Bradford. That's very unusual from what we've seen in years past.
Yeah, there's something.
Well, I'm hoping it's just a scent thing.
That's what I'm hoping
seasoning.
Too. I hope it's just once the season's gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, but it's a lot of metal out there.
Well, because you had 100
with oils and
yeah, except that it's the one entrance. And that's the thing. It's one out of four. One out of five entrances from the Washington Shore system. So it just seems to me that it's a lot. Yeah, one out of five across that much. unless all the fish go on that side, but that's not what's happening.
Now, is there vibration equipment on
there? The hangers are still vibrating. Now, most downstream hangers are still periodically vibrating. At least what I saw it a couple of weeks ago, I don't know about today.
What about harmonics?
Yeah, there could be something there too. I mean, there's the LPS system, the lamprey system, does affect both of the MORF entrances in some way. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, I was going to bring it up on here, and I thought, well, yeah,
it's
what it is. We're watching it, but what are you going to do? And we could shut the whole thing down and go in there and try to take that stuff out. But I don't think anybody wants to do that now. So all we can do is wring our hands.
You do realize we might just totally screw our RT study, though. If we can't
That's why you probably should be doing RT studies the first year after making all
this
changes.
God, who said that? I don't know. I wish I thought of that.
Gosh darn it,
you know, that would have been a great idea to bring up.
We should have waited a year.
Yeah, I don't know who would have thought of that. Gosh darn it all.
But haven't we seen similar stuff? I mean, I didn't go back very far, but it looked like 2010 at least, there was a pretty similar pattern that ended up writing itself.
Yep.
It's the numbers. So we're starting to get into the 100 plus range, which that's a lot. We have had spill, and you know, spill started yesterday, and it was going on before that, too. So I don't know. I mean, we had a real imbalance for a couple of days, and then this last yesterday, it evened out again. We had our spill start the same day, so there's a complicated issue there.
I'm just wondering if it's just not a fluctuation, because I went through the days you had listed, and the split was pretty. I mean, we ranged from about 58 to 66%.
Well, that's if you look at all species. If you look at spring.
No, I'm just looking at, I'm talking water.
Yeah.
Going through B2 versus B1, so it's not like it's drastic difference going through B2, because we're talking about 6 units running versus 9 apparently.
Well, nothing we can really do about it, but keep an eye on it. And yeah, we're going to figure it out.
Look at it. I mean, we're going to have fish in the river this year to look at, so we'll see if there's a avoidance of that side of the particular. And really, the concern is going to be what we do about the future. You know, if you see a problem.
Especially the single skip the lamp, but
I don't think there will be. I really don't. I think if it's anything, it's going to be temporary. But it could be a year, but not multiple years. So we can just watch it, document, and we may have to use the information to address how we do things in the future.
Maybe you get the structures in a little sooner?
Yeah, or we could just delay, you know, testing.
You really want to go?
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Where was it 2 months ago?
Well, better late than never.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so we'll continue, you know, monitoring it and see what comes from it. So you had an add-on on a spillway hoist. Do you want to talk about spill hoist? Is that something?
Yeah,
I was here. 18.
Get an update on the spillway hoist, where we're at, once everything's back to normal.
Is back to all automated?
17, you mean?
Yeah, 15, 17.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. I think everything's good. They just needed, I didn't get enough data to see if they were just actually waiting until they could spill, so I'm assuming they ran that up to where they needed to because they had those few days starting on the, whatever it was, 7th,
right,
I think, when they started spilling.
Yeah.
So I didn't get any negative feedback, so I'm assuming that was...
We're all back to push button?
Yep.
All back to push button, all the hoists in the right place.
It should be, yeah.
Again, there's nothing else that's on the horizon that's snapping, popping, and cracking as we
exploding.
Not that we know of.
And systems.
Yep.
Systems creaking forward.
Okay. Unit 18 at the Dow, is that a service? What's the update, Bob?
That one is done. Unit 18 is back in service right now. However, it will be out again the 22nd through the 24th of April. Just for some electrical upgrades, we're just going to move the chain gate to 19, open that one, so have that priority for those days.
Any issues with that, 19?
Is that, if captured that switch in the fish passage plan as an automatic thing?
It's just adjacent.
Yeah.
I
brought it up at last FPOM just as a courtesy.
Yeah, I remember.
So.
Yeah, so now
yeah,
we don't need to have any MOCs for
it
or anything like that. We're just updates.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay.
There is a question of how long if the unit's going to be out. Is that the one I'm looking at is going to be just for like 6 or 8 hours? Do you do the switch, or how long does it take to do the switch to 19?
To do the switch for the chain gates, it's just an hour or two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Each way?
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't take long at all for them to open.
Yeah, I would suggest do it as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're down for an hour, if the unit's down, no. But.
Right.
So it's down for 8 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what we've been going on.
So what were the dates again, Bob?
22nd through the 24th is when they're going to do that.
This month?
Yep.
And spill bays 9 versus 10 and 11 wire ropes, trunnion pin, what's...
No new updates on that from the last F-bomb.
Any cost estimates?
Pretty much settled on from the last F-bomb, bay 10 and 11, right?
So, right.
Yeah, we covered that.
No, there's been no more fine-tuning on the cost estimate on that one.
That's how we do
actually,
updates.
They
right
were
there.
Actually replacing
5 minutes.
One of the Willamette projects. Are you aware of that? Replacing a
Big Cliff. I think Big Cliff.
Is it? Okay. So I suggested that our engineer talk to them so they can fine tune the trunnion pin estimate.
Okay.
But no, nothing new on the numbers.
All right, great. Thanks. Critical spare parts 3.3, Ken.
Yeah, well, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, no. You don't get a breather here.
So I've been tasked with following up the projects, state projects, to make sure we're getting spare parts. This is critical spare parts for fishways, adult juvenile fishways. And as you know, that's important because you can have issues that we already showed up, like in the barrier, or the one out little used with the fish pump, or even just one out Lomo with the hydro can prepared to get parts that you just can't order right, go down to the local, you know, hardware store and get. So I've talked to Melissa Charles Bowles on the phone to get their feedback on
talk about the website
what they have going for spare parts list. And those projects have at least a rudimentary list started, or they have an old list from previous years, because this isn't anything new, as you're all aware. You know, we have had spare parts list in the past, but they get out of date, and it's not updated all the time. Years go by, and so what I've been tasked to do is kind of get a template together that might be appropriate for a spare parts list so that we kind of are on the same page as far as how it's organized, how it's listed, what we're looking at. So I'll just frame what I have so far. I haven't sent this out to any of the projects yet, but I'm still working on it. But
the hope was that between the two districts, we would start with kind of a uniform background template and then add the specifics that might be unique to any project or any series of projects into his template as it's built.
So you guys are approaching this not from the spare parts you have, but from the needs approach, because I mean, I got
both.
A lot of spare parts in my garage, but they don't fit the cars I have anymore. So.
Exactly. So that's
what
I think that's
they?
Where he's going with it. His template is that he'll have a list of what they have existing, but then the reason that you asked for the spare parts list a couple meetings ago is, you know, talk to your project biologist. What would be critical? Granted, you may not have the funds this year to buy those, but let's have that on the horizon that people
gravel,
can pull this list
gravel,
and see
what
you need and what the cost might be.
Or what is critical to have on hand?
Right.
So you have it or you don't have it.
Right.
Gravel,
right.
Size.
For
at
whatever level.
Studies
and
Hill Creek.
Right.
Provided.
Okay.
So we didn't get into the details today, but just the fact that you're going to have some shots with
So you heard that feedback they just gave Ken, right? So you kind of want to know what they have is great, but what is it that you should have that you don't have as well? Have that on there,
sure.
And then a projected cost.
That's the key here. We're trying to get out what we don't have. And that's the real key here is the items are missing. Can we start appropriating those? Do we need to go higher? Do we need to go to Congress to say, hey, you know, we have a system of
yes.
How high can
we don't care.
we need to go to Congress.
Currently, like in the storeroom in the warehouse or wherever it's kept at, specific parts and numbers you have, then maybe the target number of what you'd like to have. So this would be, you know, parts that they determine are needed for their current fish ways. And then the approximate cost per year of the part. So I think it's kind of a project to decide what they consider critical. I mean, obviously, you just can't say, make a decision here, but it's up to them what they consider critical. And like for Lomo, this is kind of what I threw together real quick. I mean, on the first column, you have your basic things like cranes, spillway, juvenile fish bypass, transport facility, adult fishway. Then you have the subcategories that are broken down in column E, so kind of gets more to go along. And then column C would even be further down from there. So the idea is, more, you know, the first column would be maybe more general enough that would be applicable to all the projects. And as you work the way down, each project would be a little bit different, and they would tweak as it goes along. And an example of the specific parts would be like right here, pit tag equipment. Well, they actually have a pretty good list going already, and so I just borrowed from there, and this would be like under that section. And then here's what they have, what they'd like to have on the shelf. So yeah, I can provide further updates as we progress here.
It sounds to me like once you get actually a list that hasn't filled in would be the time to come back.
I think so, yeah. Well, we can look at the categories to see if something's missing or if we're getting too detailed or maybe something. We're going to be more concerned about the critical things that keep fishways working and spillways working and things like that. Not so much the pit tank, bits and pieces. Still, that's good to have. You need to have.
Are we looking for like a standard form for all the projects to use?
That was the hope when we initially kicked this off, is that we'd have kind of an outline that was somewhat standardized, but there was flexibility as needed to deviate on a project-by-project basis, but that we would start with kind of a backbone outline that everybody at each project kind of agreed was, because obviously we started to have some stuff specific to JFFs that changes a little bit between projects where you're transporting, where you aren't, things like that.
Will we get any feedback from FPOM or elsewhere? I talked to Ken about this a little bit as far as a threshold either feasibility or cost or something. There's just going to be some things that are, it's just not possible either by size, you know, space.
Spare fish yet sitting right there.
Well, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. It's like, well, it'd be nice to be able to just slap in a new fish valve.
That's a pretty critical thing. I mean, do we have them? That bottom is a critical, I think, location given the age of the condition.
That's where the slap the new ladder is?
The system. Skate Island. Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, valves are.
I just didn't know how far we could go.
There is.
Obviously, there's a cost.
The fish passes through.
An inflatable ladder.
I don't think cost is supposed to be the driver. I think reliability in season was the driver. So what's important to you to have at your project so that you can function, you know, as you're asked to within the fish passage plan for the season?
With no consideration cost for this exercise.
Yeah, no consideration for this exercise.
Ken, did you...
What is reliability cost?
No, that's something that could be a column there.
Because that's really critical, is if it only takes you 2 weeks to get it versus it's going to take you 2 years to get it. Those are sort of important things.
Very true. I think that it's going to require, you know, investigating by the project to find all that, you know, fill this in, to figure out what's critical, what the lead time is, the cost. It's going to take a lot of research.
Budget cycles.
Yeah. Then we get bigger, you know.
Budget cycle.
The part that I'm hoping it comes down to is in the bushings and bearings. Some we found that we used up all of them at the full use 2 years ago, and then there were other ones that realized that some were either missing or stored improperly. So they've been doing an investigation for that. I'll try to give a briefing next month.
Yeah, that would be good.
Because it appears they're not ordering them quick enough, maybe. Yeah, transformer bushing. They're really big ones. Because when you start losing transformers in certain locations, it's really critical. Yeah.
Another challenge.
It starts to sound like WIC.
another challenge on this too is going to be the color of money, because if you're talking fish units, it's power money, and that's going to be a whole different arena.
That could all be sorted out later. I think they just wanted to kind of, unawareness. Now, you know, you guys at your own projects probably have in the back of your mind a better idea, and there was just a need to try to pull that all together a little bit more so than what we had been.
Let's throw the kitchen sink in now, and we can start thinking about some of those things.
For some of the shorter meetings when we're looking for agenda items.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'll talk about when are those.
That was
eventually
today.
Down the line, we could get the spare parts list from them, which is the maintenance program that are all the downtown. Warehouse inventories and programs. It would be the appropriate place to have a critical spare parts list. A big habit right now is, I guess, a lot of projects haven't identified what is critical once they do that.
And eventually, project people probably already know it within the core, but what valve in Bonneville could be used if, you know, if you've got a spare valve here, could it be used somewhere else?
And that's an interesting topic, and we're getting on a sideline here, but, you know, 2 years ago on one of our weekly fish calls at Division, there was some talk about could we get for things like fish pumps something like that, because right now there's no continuity throughout our system, and so, you know, that would allow us down the line to need fewer spare parts if we had more that was interchangeable. But that's a whole other exercise that is beyond our scope.
That's after I'm retired.
A good thing to do, yeah.
Interchangeable parts?
Well, every damn should be exactly the same, too.
That's right.
We tried that as a thing. We're all robots. All right, let's move on. Research updates.
TRD?
A turd.
Unit 14 was returned to service on the 26th of March with successful TRD installation. Harbor Engineering went in the following few days there. I think they started on the 29th. Physical velocity measurement testing were done by April 4th. The data that we have right now is very coarse and needs further analysis, but what they've done is they've looked at four elevations in the gate well and compared that to what we would consider anything of a, you know, a red flag, which would be like a large scale inconsistency, the CFD modeling, and they have not seen anything.
Did they see a change though?
That information as to the magnitude of the effect of the TRD on turbulence is forthcoming. I don't have anything on that.
Okay.
And so April 8th began the biological testing. And Lyle is currently releasing fish and processing data. Next week, you guys have probably seen the RCC teletype regarding the Spring Creek fish release coming up and the hard constraint from April 12th to April 17th for mid-range operations at Powerhouse 2. We adjusted the testing schedule. We're not going to test on Monday, and we'll start with low-end testing on Tuesday and follow up with high-end testing at 0901 on Wednesday. And so we will meet that hard constraint with our test schedule.
That will work. So whether we do river run fish, still out there.
Yes, we need to get the information from the velocity testing and discuss that regionally. River run testing doesn't start until the 13th of May.
Yeah, well, I guess we're using Spring Creek as a...
Well, and that's fine, because that was the first indicator.
It was.
Not the only one, but it's the first
case. Most sensitive.
And those fish are in the river as we speak, I'm sure of it. They were kicked out this morning.
I know that.
Go forward.
Nice job, John. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's do the AFF.
Let me just extend my thanks to John and Scott for, you know, and Lyle for switching things around.
Yeah.
It was beneficial.
Yeah, and the project, it was accommodating as well with the...
And Ben.
Yes. Ben. Yes.
I like it when we give thanks out.
It happens around.
Yeah, I know.
AFF modifications, so we...
Especially if they're coming from Crit.
There we go.
Can we get one of those soon?
Nope. We're continuing AFF modifications. The task group met at Bonneville on April 2nd with the researchers, Washington, University of Idaho, and CritVic. We discussed some of the complications with having three groups in there this year and the new equipment and what we could do as far as sampling. You will see there is a change form. It's a draft change form for AFF operations. That was developed, that came from this meeting, and we'll discuss that today. I believe it's later in the schedule.
Yes.
And recently, we were working with the baffle design to try to minimize velocity at the exit to the Braille pool. That was installed yesterday and the day before. And Ben actually saw it, so I was hoping I could get a performance update.
And Ben sent photos.
Yes, yeah. And Ben sent photos.
I don't know if any of you could tell what was going on with those photos, but I tried to take video and it didn't work out well. But so it's like we discussed at the meeting, it's 18 inches underwater, about a foot that's above water, with inch gaps, 4x4s. It Schlenker's out there yesterday afternoon. It's one thing we have to do. There's just an oversight. Mom, I'm going to do it Monday, take the clearance again, and have you guys fix it. They put the plate on the floor, like we had discussed. What we need to do is go back and put one vertical piece on the Braille, which you could probably see the amount of water going in there.
Yeah, that was the problem. First thing caught my eye.
And that'll go, that's why I took that photo. That'll go away completely once we put that. We have a piece cut already, so it won't take any time. The one question we had was, you know, Steve kind of was doing preliminary testing yesterday afternoon because he's like, you know, there's a lot of value until we get that piece in there as far as giving you hard numbers. But it reduced velocity to like, you know, half a foot on the surface and about 2 feet down the bottom. So way better.
What's your direction of velocity of flow at the exit to the Braille pool? Which way is it flowing?
Currently it's flowing the wrong direction. That will change once we put the plate up. Because once you're getting to this, you have the baffle here. Right. All your water's going in the Braille pool, circling around coming out.
Yeah, coming out. Well, also I'm wondering about is it goes under the baffles and then expands. And you got, is there an eddy that comes back?
By the exit?
Yeah.
Not really. No, I mean, not from...
It's all going down towards...
Yeah, I mean, I think you get flow in there that's not perfectly, you know, parallel with the trash rack because of the drainage, so you get a little bit of a... Yeah. But, you know, as far as appearance is drastically better, the one difference, you know, or the one question I had, and I don't know if you could see it in there very well, there's an inch gap that's about 2 inches above the water surface.
Right.
And the question was, is that a concern to anybody?
Yeah, it is. Well, I think what's going on, if you also a concern a little bit, is if you cut off the flow that's going to the Braille pool, you cut off the flow that's coming out of there, now all that flow has to go under. That's going to change hydraulics of what how that flow goes under the valve pipe.
Sure.
You built up some head. Obviously, there's head built up on the front of that valve pipe. So there would be water going through the slot. So is that velocity head or is that
potential?
That head is surprisingly small. Okay. At least now, it's going to increase.
It's
got a big area underneath. Yeah.
Right, and so it'll increase
what you want.
That velocity will increase it. Yeah. Is that an issue?
And that was a question on whether or not we wanted to close that gap, because that will mitigate that a little bit.
Yeah. That one close to the surface?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, close it. And change your bolt ends.
So
you got all the bolts facing the wrong way. You got all the tail end of the bolts.
Are they down carriage bolts that are in there? Or the carriage?
They are. Yeah, I believe.
Put caps, cover the ends, or flip them.
We can flip them. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to get a fish in there. They're an inch off the wall, so you'd have to. I mean, if I did that, I might be able to get one.
Yeah, but you got a center line, a bunch of bolts too.
Those are flush with the nut.
Well, I still don't like nuts in there either.
Well, I mean, we can flip them. It wouldn't be, I mean, it's easy enough for me to get in there on Monday and adjust it.
And it would be your information. Take the whole thing out and switch it around.
That's harder. I think it doesn't really come out as a piece.
No, they just come out.
Fish were released at 10:15. Increase.
Yeah, we're close to the top
schedule. Are you worried about not getting enough surface flow that close? Because then you're not getting.
It's not. There's not that much coming through there anyway.
No. Will be. That was the question. Was once we block all that water going out the side, does anyone want that water?
Well, this is all going to force more under. Still, you drive up the head of.
2 degree difference in temperature.
Yeah, take away a, I'd rather have it flow underneath. It's not going to be that much, and get away from the surface to surface. That little bit of flow coming down through the surface is a cue for fish to move. Even if not trapped. So, I mean, there's not that much flow there. I think that's just unfortunate of where that gap ended up so close to the surface.
Yeah, it was kind of I believe that was a design issue with people that don't work with lumber much. Because 4x4 times 4x4.
Three and a half thing.
So the guidance that we got was, that gap's not supposed to be above the water. I'm like, well, you do 3x, you did it above
the water. If you don't want to close it, I would take a piece of, if you're going to take it apart anyway,
put a spacer.
If you don't want to lose it, I'd put a gasket, piece of gasket material in there for right now, and you can always
pull it out
later if you wanted to.
Just put a different spacer in there.
Yeah, it won't be a big deal. We talked about that. As soon as we saw it, we realized we're going to have to put that in.
Maybe chops up.
Fine again. Now, we'll fix it Monday morning. Steve will come back out Tuesday.
Cool. Yeah, the only thing I really worry about is when are you supposed to be starting, John?
Monday.
Yeah, good to know.
Yeah. We're looking at doing some test runs on like Monday, but we can. We usually start when we get about 500 a day over.
Total.
So
we're getting close then.
We're getting close.
As far as like the bolts being in the corners, fish never moves up to the corner and run a jump at the corners for that.
No, I just don't think you would be. I looked at that. It'd be tough to get them in there. I mean, they're close to the side.
Are they cut off by any chance?
No, that's worse when they cut them off. You send up with something sharp.
Right. So these are just regular.
Yeah. Sharpened. And everything in there has been, they put that plate, I don't think it's all very well, but there's a plate welded to that 4-inch I-beam on the drill pool.
Yeah, saw that. Yep.
So that's all been rounded
off. Yeah, yeah. So I wonder how they're going to do that because it's
Yeah, we can fix those things easily.
Yeah. So Monday afternoon it'll be done?
Yeah.
Monday afternoon?
It's going to be done Monday.
Done Monday afternoon.
Done Monday, yeah. Okay. Tested hopefully Tuesday morning by Steve.
And then we'll have some information for him by the end of the week.
Next week?
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's move on. What?
Skip that one.
Skip what one? 5?
No. The one under the AFS modification.
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's in protocols for that.
We're going to go to the RCC update now. Here we go.
Get
your pencils ready, people. This is important.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Flows at Lower Grinding yesterday averaged 63 kcfs.
I'll email you.
And they are forecasted 5 days out on the 15th to be around 60 kcfs, and the 20th of April around down to about 50.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's dropping out. McNary, yesterday's average 265, forecasted to be on the 15th in the neighborhood of 252, and on the 20th. Between 218 and 230 is the range that RFC is giving. So, yeah, not much to see there. And then Bonneville, yesterday's average 287 down to about 262 on the 15th and around 233 on the 20th. So yeah, it.
We've had our first one year.
I think the pressure is gone, pretty much.
Who was the first one? 67, 63.
Any questions for the RCC? Yeah. Who knows what's going to happen?
As far as water supply forecasts go, they're just right around average, as long as you don't have a snake.
It would have been an awful year to do performance testing with the snake this year. Up a little average year.
The Dalles is still, it's at an average now.
So it was.
It's about 97,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it's about 90,
95,
97.
Dave, you're the number guy?
Yeah. 97.
That's good.
A little bit above average in Upper Columbia.
It's called Upper
Columbia. So, Lisa, thank you and Doug for all the teletypes getting out and starting season.
And we're off.
You're spilling.
Is this Russ?
Yes.
Russ.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take off for lunch and sign off.
I was going
to
say, so. Go walk the dog.
All right, yeah, you got it. We'll talk to you guys later.
See ya.
See ya.
I wish I could go with you, Russ.
You can, if you had a dog. You work for Idaho, you could do that kind of thing.
He has a shock collar.
Start an hour earlier, though.
Let's go to the PinniPet update. Nathan, you got a...
Yeah, Sam's the one rolling up for me this morning.
Our participant has
I think he's starting to pick up at Bonneville, so he's out there working. And here's what he had to say. Today, slightly fewer average daily Staler sea lions than the past couple of years, fewer California sea lions present than since we started doing observations in 2002. So, Staler's average, California sea lions down.
Yeah, they're all in the weather.
Mostly repeat Stalers and mostly new California. Lowest predation on sturgeon since 2007, and salmon since 2002. Abundance of predation on Chinook beginning to increase this past week. I guess you're showing up, so predation's increasing. ODFW reported a record of 627 California sea lions in the East Mooring Basin of Astoria on April 9th, about two times as many as they'd ever seen before. Did the docks sink? Sea lions haul out on an ODFW research boat in the basin 2 weeks ago and partially sank it. ODFW reports about 55 California sea lions between Beacon Rock and Hamilton Islands. Several small pods of adults are cruising the river, but they haven't shown up at Bonneville yet. States plan to begin active trapping next week, and they're assembling a smaller trap for use in the forebay. And they're going to actually try to take it up to the Dalles and trap a California sea lion there beginning next week with a permitting.
Ones that live there 3 years.
There's three of them.
There's
three of them. There's a stone
and
down.
Yeah, the one in the hot tub is easy to get.
He's in the plumbing house on the right.
The states will put a few critter cams on Stellar's the week of April 22nd with the help of National Geographic developer who wants to test out his quick release mechanism. And the guy is also a Stellar sea lion expert, so that's
good. Whoops.
It works.
It's
a funny
sheep
you got.
These cameras. These cameras can record 10 hours of video, and they're hoping to answer questions like, do they eat fish underwater? If so, how many? Do they take fish right in front of the entrances? And how much do they feed at night?
Potential questions. You know, like streaming.
Streaming video. Well, that's what they need for remotely release mechanism to get the data.
Are they infrared cameras?
Are they doing that? Don't know anything about the cameras.
The
guy from National Geographic is the only person that developed some of the critter cams.
Which cam? They're going to do it.
Which entrance?
Yeah.
Which entrance?
This critter cams will be on the Stellar.
On the Stellar.
Oh! The one that has the Wi-Fi enabled.
Should be interesting.
Sorry. Well, it makes it from the missile guidance very a lot more.
But we might be able to get some useful information as to what they're up to. Right. Hopefully, we'll see the one jump on the barge. And Stellar made it up to the forebay 2 weeks ago for the first time, so the first Stellar was in the forebay. Mm-hmm. He was back down below the dam about a week later.
Oh, did you get him up?
What did he do while he was up there?
Starve.
Yeah, watch the critter cam.
Yeah. Eat kelts.
Yeah.
Eat kelts, sturgeon.
I saw that. I saw that.
I came through the corner.
You know, he went to walking
so I'm trying to figure out how it came back down.
Probably.
Tide boarding.
Right. Probably came back down. Like a double mountain.
Double mountain.
So that's the pin pinup.
Do you guys report? I can't remember if the annual or the weeklies have the four bay count as best as you can get. I know you're not observing up there, right. But you have.
I don't think that typically includes too much information in the weekly. And that was something to mention,
it's
too.
Been three
if you guys are interested
while.
In this, I can get you on the list for his weekly.
I know what's out there. But what I'm wondering is if you can do that, start putting in
four-way information.
Just a paragraph on four-way information.
It'd probably be mostly anecdotal. But
yeah, that's fine. I know Bob's watching up there. And folks are looking. Bjorn's, you know, mentioning they're watching the four-way.
Travel members are pissed.
If you've got it,
I know.
Let's report it. That way we kind of keep an eye on it.
If you know that
an animal went downstream, that could be information by useful information too. So, okay, it's just the plus side. Keep up on it. Yeah.
And we've been documenting.
Nice if we had it pulled into one place, and it seems like that report's the best place. I'm not asking Jeffrey for you guys to start doing some sort of structure for information for the day.
Sure.
And we've been documenting what we've been seeing at the bells too. I don't know if you want to put that in your report or we just put it in our staff reports, however you
want. Yeah, I get it in there, but it'd be good if it was in the sea line. Because not everybody's,
of course,
you know, a lot of managers aren't looking at
right.
stuff.
To look at sea lines.
Question my boss. And our protection resources division folks don't look at that.
Bob, did you put in place that they shouldn't block a sea lion through if they see one in the water?
Yes, at the Dalles.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. So you put that into place.
So what do they do if they see one going at? They wait.
You open it up.
Open the back end and
lower it back down.
They're
on their own.
Throw pretty quickly. Or
yeah.
Okay. We're also working with our bird hazers too to set up so they can go haze sea lions if we see one camping out on an entrance. So we'll just pull them over and have them go over there and try to get it away.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye if we start seeing.
Yeah, we're seeing them
in
more.
The fish way, then, you know, we're going to be thinking about
sleds.
Sweet.
Yeah. We've been watching that close. We haven't seen anything inside
yet.
You get
three, yet, you get four, you get 10, pretty soon you got problems.
So. We've been seeing more out in front.
And they seem to be able to live up there in fresh water just fine. It's not like they have to live somewhere.
I'm sure they'll have to give us some eyes to be living.
We haven't seen a sure. Second, we've seen some of skillet things. Yeah, just a few. But we don't spend the time watching them like we do in a long
time. All right, so if anybody wants to be added to the weekly list, just let me know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Nice picture. You know if that is telephony. Did you take that?
It's going around.
Camera?
I got a photo from, actually this is a sea shepherd or dam shepherd, whatever they call themselves, from Bonneville Dam. But it did highlight an issue that concerns me. And so I was trying to figure out what our protocol are, and I think what we have is that there can't be any hazing, at least with boats and cracker shells, particularly underwater, within 100 meters of the fishway entrances, which that, you know, it's telephoto, so it's hard to say exactly where that is,
but that's
it's pretty damn close. And, what's that?
Football field away.
Oh, yeah, it's within a football field, more than football, yeah.
I will send it up to.
I'm going to talk to Doug. Or, you know, I probably would like to have had this on the agenda, so maybe Doug would be here. But we need to dust off our protocol for BRZ hazing and make sure that these guys are sticking with that. And the thing I don't like about this picture that I'm seeing is they're using the shotguns overhead, and the whole purpose of that is to drive the cracker shot underwater, and that becomes a seal bomb. We're saying not to use seal bombs in these areas. That's becoming a seal bomb, and I don't want to see that.
You know,
this
makes me wonder, you know, if we might be seeing some effective passage.
Well, that's the concern, you know. That's exactly what I'm concerned about.
It's surprising on the river.
You know, I mean, it's my invitation. The benefits of hazing, which I'm not sure
you're talking about. You don't see a redhead out there with a shotgun, so it's not technically my fault.
What's the distance limit on that?
Well, okay,
100 meters.
Find for me our protocol.
Yes.
We develop protocol.
Yeah, we have.
I could not find it anywhere on the webpage. Parts weren't working, so it's low. I'm not saying anything against your webpage. I'm just saying I couldn't find it. If you can find it for me, that'd be great, because I want to look at that again. I've gone to our Protective Resources Division. They will do something about this if they have once I establish that there are some issues that are, you know, as a result of this, and I'm not out there every day, but seeing that picture makes me, you know, wonder what's going on. So.
Hey, Ben, would it be worth painting a line on the wall where I'm here?
I
win for what it's worth this year. I don't think that's as close as it appears by any means, because those guys have been told in years past when it was too close, and we've had, you know, we've got FFU are out there, and they let us know if they see anything. They're in contact with those guys, right. And they have on their BRZ permit, which I can get if Tammy can't find that, all the limitations with distance and seal bomb use.
You just say they got this from the FFU, but that was because of their concern of what was going on, so.
Yeah, and if they're too close and they see them, they are supposed to call us, and we, you know, either let Doug or
there's two issues here. One is how close they are, and that can be arguable because it is a telephoto. The other issue, though, is firing a gun. So that I've watched them do this. I watched them, I don't know how many times they shot at a sea lion. This was a couple of years ago, and it was down towards the tip of Cascade Island. And that animal played with them for about 20 minutes and then disappeared. And last time I saw it, it was at the entrance, the downstream south entrance, eating a salmon. So, you know, obviously they'd worked up an appetite and needed to get something to eat. I don't think it's very effective. And certainly shooting, doing that is driving that round in the water a foot or two, and that becomes a seal bomb. Now, that's okay downstream. It's not good if they're doing that in the PRC.
Gangster style is
the gangster.
Very good.
I see them do it all the time. That's just not, I don't, you know, again, downstream fine, upstream not.
And that's the kind of stuff we didn't get into with, we don't tell them how to
Yeah, so I just don't know how effective these guys really are overall. It doesn't seem to be very effective at all. So I would go, you know, I think we need to defer to the salmon passage on this range. I'm just going to point out.
You go talk to there's actually a sea lion task group. You can go talk to them.
So, there's an effective resource division that I have talked to.
Well, the question is, though, so right now, didn't we just say that we've seen almost no sea lions up on the deck? Now, is that because sea lions aren't there, or because
this was taken on April 5th? So this was this year.
Well, but that's my point. And didn't we just hear from Nathan that we've seen very few sea lions up around the dam? Is that because they don't like to be there, or because the hazers are doing their job? I don't know
how they change what they're doing.
The reason they're not there is because
I'm saying, if you guys have a problem, go talk to Sea Lion Task Group and say, hey, what's up with your hazing? Make your hazing like this.
Well, we can make a recommendation here, too. I mean,
that's fine.
That's what the Public Health Task Group was about here.
What I'm saying is, if we want to have that, then get the people that are the right people in the room to do that.
All I want to do is make sure.
Call me and have a conference call. I don't care.
We have
don't pick on me because I have no authority over these people. And you can pick all you want, but I have no authority, so I can make no changes for you. So if you want to have a change done, I would suggest you talk to the right people. There you go. Done and done.
So
I'm glad to carry it, and then you'll have your flip phone tag for another week, and nothing will get done. So if we want to do that, we can do that.
Okay.
Awesome. Once again, the Columbia River process. Fully effective.
So we have a process. I'm just trying to establish what the criteria are. I need to get that down to make sure that we have that. I know we have
got
it
right here. We got it right here.
Yeah. I don't think. Well, the thing is, I'm 10-1. There's nothing in there about proper use of a shotgun or how you aim a shotgun.
Right.
I guarantee that's not in there. If you want to add that, then that's okay. You need to come in there. No gangster style. That I want to see how you describe that. That'd be awesome.
I don't have to. The issue is that we don't want that nation.
I don't think that they want to be realistic.
That's it.
But you're okay with it down in a
certain area? Yeah, once you get out of the BRZ, I think that's what the criteria say. I'm not sure.
You got to be out of the BRZ, I think.
I think once you're out of the BRZ, then I don't care.
What it says.
All right, what it says.
From February 2007, and this is just so I have Let me just back up a moment. On the FPOM website, if you can't find a memo or anything, but you have an idea of where, what it's about, go to the index sheets that are on the top, which are only for Portland District right now.
Yeah, this was the Pinnipiac task
group. Yeah. So if you can't find it there, go. Bonneville has sea lions, and on February in 2007, we said that no more than 3 to 5 seal bombs per animal per hazing occurrence, no seal bombs within the BRZ once fish counts have reached 1,000 total. Any mortalities will result in immediately ceasing all seal bomb activities within the BRZ. It was recommended that the shoreline be painted so hazers know where their 100-meter limits are, and it was reiterated that this is a one-year maximum effort.
Right.
So that was you know, 6 years ago.
And it was carried forward. Yes. I don't know how it was
every
carried
year.
Forward after 2007. But when
I talked to the
Protected Resources Division, they said they're supposed to be using the FBOM developed criteria. So that's why I
went to
FBOM and checked the 2007 notes, and none of that would work. So I tried to check the Pinnipiac, clicked on that. That didn't work. So I was kind of, I don't have time for that.
So that's what's in the BRZ permit.
Okay, so we need to make sure if that's all that there is out there from FPOM, then that's what I'm going to carry forward to PRD. And, you know, that's so just all I'm asking is let Doug know.
I was going to take the photo and take it up there, no
problem. Just let him know that we're concerned about it if he's, you know, watching it. And
well, I would say, he's enough to, like, set up a conference call early next week and let's talk. He's enough to do that.
So it'll be PRD. I'll just carry it forward to those guys.
All right. Is PRD going to have, are they really that well informed of this stuff?
They will when I give them this information.
So we're going to play,
I don't know what we're going to play.
We're going to play telephone here, so you're going to tell the line, and they're going to talk to
just get the right people moving.
Why don't we just make an informed recommendation? There's no shooting the carpet shells in the water that's had beers.
The problem is, you can.
What are you going to
really?
What I have is whenever I write their approval letters.
It doesn't matter how they shoot, they just can't shoot.
We have a memo from January 2012.
Okay, you just recruit taller shooters.
They have to stay
there you go.
We'll
send John out there.
That's what I'm saying.
We'll put them on platform.
We need shorter shooters out there, so they can't do that.
And 300 feet away
so you get
from
the resemble that. It's going to be this short to operate the shotgun.
Yes.
Taller than the gun, you're not.
If you're legally a midget, you're allowed two shotguns.
Okay, there we go.
Go lifting the gun off your shoulder.
Yes.
Awesome.
No angles greater than.
Well,
can
right,
you send that out to
FBOM,
whatever you.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this isn't an effective program in the first place. I think we could review.
I don't know.
So Tammy's going to get the existing recommendations and send it back out so you can send it up the chain to your people.
And then they'll call our people.
And then. Just kind of like, let's, and then maybe we need to add the angle of the shot.
That's going to be awesome. I can't wait to see that.
Is there any criteria now that says you can shoot him if he's right next to the boat or has to be at least 10 yards away or anything like that?
No.
Because that's going to...
It says three seal bombs.
And that's another question, Tammy. You did, I think I heard, seal bombs when you read that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that synonymous with these cracker shells?
No.
Okay.
Seal bombs are different than cracker shells.
But if you're shooting them into the water and they're going beneath the surface, it's performing the same way, essentially.
But how far? They're not as powerful, I assume.
No. I don't know.
Well, a firecracker...
But they're powerful.
A seal bomb is defined as a firecracker that goes off underwater. And what they're shooting out of those popper shells is a firecracker that goes off.
Okay, have you seen the seal bomb?
So,
those might be your firecrackers, but in Oregon, that's not a firecracker. That'd be an
M8.
Yeah, I was on board a vessel when a seal bomb went off about 10 feet from me, and that was very loud.
They're an impressive, impressive display. Cracker shell, you don't even notice it going off.
Cracker shells are pretty loud.
Yeah, when they're above the water.
Burn.
You go into
take
the water.
A seal, take a seal bomb in the water.
They seem about the same to me. The point is, we're trying to make, you know, an assessment on Washington Shore Passage here, and if we have this kind of behavior in the tail race, you know, it casts a little bit of doubt, you know, on the lamprey structure. Right. So,
well, if I thought that the sea lion hazing was really effective, it'd be one. I don't.
So maybe it's time to reconvene the task group and talk about
what? Okay, let me
have W define seal bombs.
Can you rewind
underwater fire.
We wanted this back about 15 minutes ago about what I said we should do.
Awesome.
Ah,
yes. There we go.
There we go. No chance in hell.
Official provocation of...
All right. You have to be the task.
Whose vote is it? Could be very...
I'm going to get a hold of Stancil, find out when the next task group meeting is, and we'll put it on the agenda.
There you go. Holy Christ, that's
and
a great idea.
There should be an FBOM recommendation besides, I mean, we should revisit that and comment. So we'll put out the existing recommendation and update it appropriately.
Okay.
And in the meantime, please take your pictures and send them up to Gene.
We'll do that.
All right. Lamprey. Who is doing the Lamprey update?
Oh,
I know Brian's here, but...
I mean, I have something from Sean with a Washington Shore stretcher.
Okay.
That's the only reason I came today.
Okay. We've got something.
Well, I'm sure Nathan does too, but okay.
Do you have any update?
No. Well, okay. Sean told me that...
all right, Washington Shore update. Lamprey.
He told me that the LPS pumps are being scheduled for May 7th.
Yes.
And they're going to use a crane to install down at the end of the monolith. There's a coordination form that he's putting together that'll be coming soon. So they basically just need to drive the crane down to the end of the monolith, drop these things in, drive away.
So basically all they need to do is drop the pumps in place.
That's my understanding.
What about the screen? The screen I understand is constructed. Is it in place?
Screen for the pumps?
Yes.
Sean told me that was, yeah.
Were they attached to them, or is it something that's like a screen?
I don't know the details. I'm sure it'll be in his coordination.
Okay, and then make sure that, because the big question that I know Gary had and we also were interested in is like the location, exact location, and then what screen criteria they use to
that
screen.
I'm sure that'll be in his coordination form.
Look for the coordination form.
Just want to
make sure it's in the coordination form.
The date that we're looking at.
You guys are going to grill me on sea line tasks that I have no control over. I'm going to grill you on your damn task.
Oh, well.
Yeah, it's game on.
Bring it. Man up.
So has the flow been fixed to where they're going to have that
whole more sugar and more caffeine.
It works to the whole.
This is natural.
I know.
That's all I have.
Yes, we can get fish to the holding tank.
All right, so how about the Cascade Island mods? Nathan, are you talking Cascade Island mods?
Desmond,
do you have anything on that?
They finished the exit up there near 5-9. They've got one section to put back, which I don't know if people remember. There's a part where it crosses the stairs. There was a problem. It was way too low. People were bashing their head against it. So they just have to raise the level of it.
Oh, okay.
So that's really the only thing they have left to do. This says they'd be done by the end of March, which obviously didn't happen, but I would think a couple more weeks, probably a few more weeks.
What's that?
The whole section up a little bit.
Oh, he's on here.
Yeah.
Help collection efforts. All right. Yeah, I know. I know he's here. Got him to sign the sheet right here. So the next one is Lamprey Collection Protocols, and I know Brian's here because Tom just pointed that out to me. You want to come to the table, Brian?
Yeah, so I just wanted to update.
Well, it sounded like we're having so much fun down here, so I figured
to see what was going on. But I'm not really talking about the collection protocols. I just wanted to provide an update on the collections for translocation last year and the forecast for this year, tribal collections. So got some handouts here. I don't think I printed out enough, but I can definitely send versions to Tammy to send out. But what's being passed around are three sets of documents. The first one is just the forecast for 2013 for adult collections, for tribal collections. And then also on that sheet are the collections from last year, so 2012. And that those numbers were pulled from the draft core Lamprey Progress Report. So I really just wanted to give folks a sense of what was collected last year, what's forecasted to be collected this year, at least the goal. And then there's the second sheet that's or the third sheet that's being passed around is the tribal guidelines. So where we get these numbers from. So in summary, it's 2013. According to the tribal guidelines, each member tribe can collect about 723 lamprey total.
723, Brian, what did you say?
Yeah, 723 total. That's spread between John Day, the Dalles, and Bonneville. So 238 at Bonneville, 281 at the Dalles, 204 at John Day. So these are the goals. Last year, about 296 fish were collected for each tribe. So Nez Perce, Umatilla, and Yakima tribe collected fish for translocation last year, which was less than the forecast or the predicted allocation, which was about 379 was the goal last year. So the second sheet you have is just the calculation that we use. It doesn't have the formulas on there. If you have any questions about that, feel free to ask me. And then, like I said, the third sheet are the tribal guidelines that are in the Lamprey Restoration Plan, the Tribal Restoration Plan.
Questions?
And then, so side note, Tammy did.
I have one comment in terms of the protocol. We haven't established it yet, but just to help in framing this issue, this is obviously experimental. This is research. And there are really two fundamental issues. One is collecting, one is holding. Those are two separate ones. Collecting should be fairly straightforward. The device has been installed, and right now it's in bypass. The crane, the lifting crane, hasn't been installed yet. There's still plenty of time to accomplish that. And therefore, the tribes will be responsible for collecting, and we may be able to, we have to look what kind of permits will we have for holding those fish for them and how long and so forth. But that would be the focus, which still remains to be worked out.
So when is the protocol going to be worked out, or is that going to happen?
I think that's Sean Tackley's working on that.
I think they've been waiting for everything to be in there so they can actually run the crane and do all that kind of stuff. They wanted to do it a couple of weeks ago, but there was something not there. Maybe
we're still in that lifting crane that we were talking about. Just to kind of bring everybody else up to speed, this is specific to the John Day South Ladder. Yeah. Behind the picket leads by the count station, there's an actual lamprey trap installed there, not just a barrel trap, but it's kind of more of a funnel that feeds into a box. Yeah. And then from that box, it can be either in pass-through mode like it is now, or we can actually lift the box out and collect lamprey that way. And so the design is to actually lift it straight up out of the fishway, rotate some kind of jib crane over, and then lower it to the back of the vehicle or the receiving box or whatever. And the protocols haven't been put forward yet because we're unsure of the capacity of the winch or crane itself. Mm-hmm. If it's over 2,200 pounds, then it requires more specific certifications. Under that, it's a little more relaxed. So I'll be working with Project Safety Office and Miro at John Day to determine what they're going to require for safety there. And then with the Lamprey group and the people that do the collecting to try to mesh those two worlds together. When we have a protocol in place, we'll bring it to FPOM.
Okay, so that's what you're... Miro, any idea when that crane, I mean, I know you got time, but any idea when that might be in? So that
at the end of this month.
Some of us could get out, take a look. End of the month, like maybe the 25th, 26th?
The last time. The time is going so fast. That was the last time I heard. It may be a little bit into May, too. I'm not sure.
Just know that we get to leave our office.
I mean, maybe Nathan.
That's going to be the 25th of May.
This is happening later than anybody expected, but I don't know why.
You could have it as a pit stop on the way to the next FPOM at McNary.
Yeah, this is a contract.
If you have an FPOM at McNary, we won't be there.
Oh, you're
this
kidding.
Is a contract issue, so I have no idea why.
We're not going anywhere.
And I have to get cleared up by my executive director for travel.
Just
to drive.
We can't go anywhere. I mean, we're not even. We might be able to go to Walla Walla.
We're here. That's good.
You can walk across the street.
All right. Here. Well, I guess we'll have to do it here.
Maybe we go back to Noah for their meetings.
Oh, we can't get in the room.
Yeah.
Damn it.
They do that for water. That was restricted.
No.
Harsh. You too?
Yes.
Come on.
What if we drive them?
Yeah, can I get a bus and drive you there?
Unless you're an engineer.
I'll get a giant van and I can pick you up.
Well, I think that would work.
Tammy.
Would that be...
That'd be cool.
Need from us?
Right.
Let's do it. Get a bus.
All right.
Elaborate with the bar.
With a bar in the back.
Got all the permits, holding stuff.
Yeah.
They're available.
This is your guy you need to talk to. Don't ask me.
Okay. Any other lamprey comments?
They haven't provided anything
yet.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
okay. I
mind them.
Can we send some of those lamprey up to South San Juan?
No. We'd have probably have to work that in the tribal guidelines.
And translocation.
We'll just put that on the agenda. We need some.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I know, you have a lot.
Yeah, have you seen that dam?
No. There's no passage up there. They were cut off. Foster,
yeah.
Green Peter.
So that's going to be part of your trucker haul.
So
trucker haul lamprey now.
That could be part of the lamprey awesome. At the falls. Has anybody looked at that?
Yeah. I don't know.
Translocation.
I don't know. I bring this up in the Willamette groups, and everybody kind of shrugs their shoulders and says, "Well, Critfix in charge of that."
I haven't heard any discussion about translocating, at least from the member tribes, about translocating within the Willamette.
Now, the Grand Round, the Warren Swabby,
one step at a time.
The Willamette means shows interest. And he's with the Grand Round, so they're interested. Mm-hmm. They said they don't have the lead on that translocation stuff. You guys have the lead on it.
Are we using fish from Willamette to talk about translocation? I don't think we are. No, I mean, it's part of the guidelines, but that's kind of like a
secondary,
you know, third, fourth option.
So, getting back to the dam issue here. So can you let us know when that's going to be up? And maybe I can get a chance to get up there and take a look at it. Because I think listening to the hoists and seeing the operation and how much noise and activity is associated with that goes a long ways towards deciding what restrictions that we want to have, if any.
Yeah. Let me know too.
No ladder delays so far.
Middle of the day might not be, or maybe that's the best time when mornings are bad, no matter what.
Yeah, they say intermittently.
If it's sound, there's no sound, then it's pretty much off, you know, out of the way and insulated, then who cares?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Brian.
Cool. Thank you.
We'll do avian 3.8. Status update of lethal take of gulls at Walla Walla dams.
Yes, as we recall from last month, upon my kind of an update, what was going on then, further developments since then, or been some positive developments. Our legal office at Walla Walla has determined that we can adopt Wildlife Services EA from 2011, so APHIS Wildlife Services did. And we could steal Fonzie to cover the lethal take action at our dams. So this will speed up the process.
Significant.
And reduce the cost quite a bit.
It's only goals.
Just the different goals.
Yeah.
So that's on the positive side there. Right now we're handling the funding from the projects to the our environmental compliance folks downstairs. To do the Fonzie, and that should be a problem. Lower Monumental opted out for this year for the lethal take goals. This year, maybe.
opted out. Did they secede from the Walla Walla group?
Yeah, Phil's his own group. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Was he seen out of you? Talking about Romo and concerns about
birds and that, but we're not going to do beaver take.
And I said, maybe hazing would be a good thing to have, if possible. Hopefully they've opted out.
We got the sprinkler.
I do love the iron.
Oh, no, it's Ross.
Bill sees the APHIS actions that are currently doing this hazing as being effective with 16-hour shifts per day during the peak period. So he's For right now, I think that's adequate.
So Ken, could you still put it in the permits and you could still do it if your NEPA covers it?
Yeah, because it'll cover the whole Lower Snake River, you know, and the Fonzie's going to cover the whole area, so sure, he can change his mind. It's
yeah, wrong.
So if we see an issue, we may want to opt in.
No, you're back in. How do they say roughly what they're estimating for bird take, allowable bird take?
I've been discussing with Wildlife Services, and, you know, I know the, I don't think I have my numbers with me, but the Grant Shawnee County QDs, they were getting something like, maybe it was 500 for one of the QDs and 700 total for the other.
It's thousands. The mid-seas take thousands every year.
Okay.
And this is part of their purpose.
Yeah, what the impact is, discussion's gone down this road before. Fish and Wildlife, or some allocates so much take to be allowed, might have to transfer some upstream to downstream.
Well, that's
it's the first year.
That's
what they're
about, so don't know where they're at with it now.
How many are we asking for, Ken? Is it 85 total, or is it per project?
We don't really have a definitive number down. I mean, Wildlife Services was going to talk the state office down to the district office with those guys there, and then probably with us with our projects, and to get a good amount. You know, the idea was to get just like a total, determine what the total amount would be, and then that could be split up between the Snake River projects as it, you know,
as needed.
Yeah. Right. The state director and the assistant state director, they were saying that, you know, if all goes well, they could probably get permits in a couple of weeks. So that's good too. But then some recent developments were not so positive. Spoke with another guy at APHIS in the district office, and he was saying that, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service may be not so ready to increase the number of birds, like goals that can be taken on the permit, because they want to add it to the current permit. So like Nathan was saying, well, maybe they can take some from those PUDs and bring down, but the guy I spoke to us said that usually they use the full allotment every year, so there's not a whole lot they could really transfer now. So they're going to talk to Wildlife Services.
So yeah, Dave here, Ken, I mean, is there any way to help make this move a little faster here in terms of coordination for APHIS? Or don't you have two concerns that you've heard, both the one you just spoke of as well as the need for boats in the tail race to pick up anything that's shot? Is that a hard and fast requirement, Dave, of anything that you permit, do you know?
I honestly don't know.
Out of your special thing?
I have the gal's name that the APHIS works with in the permitting department. Apparently she's good to work with and all that. I think it was, there might be a requirement to have to retrieve these birds that are shot, and right now in the annual work plans that we have for the projects, only Ice Harbor has boat use in the work plan, so these birds are shot at the other projects, it's going to be harder to retrieve them, but the requirement. So his concern was, well, we can shoot birds closer to the shore, so that's not only the direct to the bank they get them, but then that's going to be less effective, obviously.
Is your dog here?
So he says he's using that in conjunction with agents. So you're getting really pushing the board to the middle of the river, then you can only lethally take them near the shore. It's not really, you're not really achieving what you're trying to, what your objective is. So, and then another thing he brought up was the current agents they have for the evening are not qualified to shoot these shotguns. And so they have to do training.
I've got some guys.
So we should have to get some guys.
Yeah, I don't think they're qualified either. I'm saying they're effective as seals.
And by the way, that's not gangster. It's when you turn the gun sideways as gangster.
Come on, get with you.
No, that's not even close. If they hold the gun upside down, it's gangster down. Style.
You start seeing that in movies. Yes.
Rap video.
Call it the sturgeon hole.
So now,
the sea lion hole.
Maybe we can work through these problems. I mean, they could possibly, you know, send one guy that McNary to the class. That it's just a one-day class to get the training for the firearms. You know, or they have the permanent guy that's qualified, Jesse, or one of the the regional guys can come down and do it. If you could just get some vehicle at Gary this year,
that would be
one step in the right direction.
That'll be the full pedal to the floor to try to get something at McNary at a minimum this year in a timely manner, but it's getting squeaky. Just each time he thinks he's making progress, so he made progress in-house with all the process with some assumptions that APHIS was kind of prepared for this because he did a scope of work last fall, led the pathway for them to be aware that this is what you're going to request. Now when he goes back with the formal request, lets them know that we've got the other steps and we're to theirs, they say they balk and say, oh, well, we're not really ready to do this, you know? So it's a little bit of a challenge here that he's running into. So needless to say.
This isn't the first time. Wartime, we ran the same problem. We tried the same thing before.
Has left the conference.
Unfortunately.
Okay. So anyway, we're still working it. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm going to be on it.
So you want to move to the next one, to Ken? For wire installation at Lower Granite, could you put that on?
Yeah, that's just a quick update that the two bird wires that were had got disconnected at Lower Granite, they were repaired by APHIS on March 26th, no problems. And then the hydro cannon repair at Lomo, we covered that already.
Yep, so we're done. We're to Portland District's TDA bent avian line pole.
Yeah, one of the attachments for the avian line grid on the east side of the powerhouse pole, they put in a really wimpy pole.
Looks like my TV antenna pole.
Hey, wasn't this Dennis Schwartz?
No. This was Dennis Schwartz is involved with the spillway lines.
Okay. Dang. But
I questioned them on it when they first put it in 5 years ago, and it started bending like the first year, you know. And I'm like, are you sure this is okay? And, oh, yeah.
That was fine.
It's like at the breaking point right now. So we had our crew go out and just leash all the lines to make sure we don't lose them. There's 14 lines on it. So we don't lose them if the thing does break, and then our engineer is just going to devise a new pole.
What are you going to try to put in?
I don't know why they... It'll probably put them in.
Stack out a new pole.
The next 10 months.
I'll speak to you here.
I think it'll hopefully be a John Mayer.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they
just dig around in this one.
Yeah, I don't know why they must have cheap on that one, because they put some in before that were, you know, real beefy things. But
This is not just across. This is just across the...
Just across
the fishing way. Yes.
Oh, you didn't want to put handrail in there?
Oh, you
handrail, not bird wires.
That was your problem.
Hey, Bob. So they can have something done ahead of time in case it breaks. Can they put something in, or do they have to wait?
Well, we have them leashed right now. So if the thing does break, we're
going to wait for it to break, and then they'll have a way to anchor something.
Where did you leash them to?
We actually leased them to the chains, the support chains that you see on there.
Yeah.
We just leashed the support chains through the line loops just to make sure that
chains stay.
We hold on to them, they don't go into the river. Yeah.
So, is there a pole being fabricated?
Yes.
Okay.
You're good. Yes. And we're just going to do that in-house.
It looks like they actually drilled a hole into the basalt there or something, and then grounded
it. No, the thing isn't even. It's just kind of sitting on top of the rock, and really
and
all your pressure's on the chains.
Okay,
yeah,
got it.
They got rock bolts.
Got it.
For those, yeah.
Okay.
So.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I guess they're going to come for wind load.
We got BPA updates first.
It's only
version.
Are we at John Day?
That was my question. Yeah, John Day. Have Mero?
John Day wire.
We have one missing, which is across the river between the poles, also the elevated towers, and we don't have at this point. We don't have clear O&M yet. We don't have tools. We don't have training. So that one it hasn't been replaced. That's the only one. It's kind of midway in the grid.
So are we going to get capability as a project to repair this?
Yeah, the capability right now, we got a draft O&M and it's under construction at this point. But it's a challenge because that's going to be kind of difficult operation. to access those.
Yeah, I mean, we're okay for this year, but in the future, if this thing's great, we don't want to just say, well, you can't do it.
No, we're working towards a solution for the next season.
Okay. Now, where is that at exactly in the
like area? I said, it's kind of midway.
Midway
in the grid, so hopefully...
nobody will notice?
Not going to allow the birds to penetrate the grid.
Had an eye on it.
Yeah, so Mayor, have you checked the other ones to see if they're showing any signs of fraying or wearing at the connectors? That was a concern people were having.
What was the concern?
Fraying or basically issues with the connectors.
Failing at the connectors.
Yeah, why did this one fail? Any idea?
We have the spare material. Is that what you're asking?
No, I'm saying...
Okay. Inspected the rest of the wires.
Yeah, they've been inspected.
And the connectors and the frame, because that was one of the biggest concerns they had.
Right, the only comments I kind of sent it before, the material appears to be stretching much more than we were told to originally to would in winter. In fact, it stretches other kind of opposite to most plastics, because it stretches when it's cold and actually tightens when it's warm in summer. So in winter, if you don't have tightening winches, which they were, that was one of the mats, but they were only installed on the lines which attach to the structure. The ones attaching to the cables or towers, they don't have that tensioning device, so they're still stretching. And therefore, I would expect that will eventually compromise their life expectancy.
Sure.
They will be breaking quicker than, I think, the 10 years, which was kind of expected.
And do you know why this one broke?
Because I...
Did it break at the connector, or did it break out in the middle?
It's hard to tell. The weak spot is always the splicing.
Right.
And I think the way, when I looked there was nothing on the connection site, on the Washington shore, there was nothing left, which means it failed exactly where it was connecting, not where metal holder, whatever that thing is.
Yeah, I guess the key thing here is that we have a plan for failure.
But it's still under investigation, and let's hope that the other lines look okay for now, and we'll see what happens.
I mean, I'm assuming that we bought into this one, hook, line, and sinker at this point, so it's a matter of maintaining what we have, and the project needs the capability of doing that. Money needs to be there for spare parts.
Training.
Yeah, training. All that stuff.
And again, the material is expensive. If this is going to be O&M, it's going to impact our O&M budget a lot, which is now very meager, and it's declining. So,
I would say if you're saying... we have the same problem with the corner collector of like the Spalding issue of the corner collector, because we basically, I think the O&M group has said, until the corner collector is done with the Spalding issue, that kind of stuff, we don't take full ownership, and CRFM is still... basically responsible for that. Do you want to say the same thing on these wires? And if you do, then you need to kick that back to the CRFM group, this SET group, to ensure that you have a design you're comfortable with.
Yeah,
because right now it seems like you're right.
I think
it fails because of something inherently wrong with the design, then that goes back to CRFM.
We will see what happens next. At this time, again, there's only one.
Well,
there's a problem. And I think the current understanding is that we should be able, we'll see what happens, we should be able to find a way to repair it and then see how many are going to be breaking in the future.
Yeah. I just want to make sure we have a plan.
Exactly.
Well, we don't have any evidence that they're breaking now, except we're seeing evidence that they're stretching, some of them dragging. Dragging in the river
in
winter,
river,
which is going to compromise their life expectancy, I think.
Yeah, you're in a boat out there.
It's a tricky problem, too, Mayor, from the just maintaining it, because if you tighten them up in the winter, you need to relax them in the summer.
Right.
There's a tension, you essentially need a tension gauge on nearly every line.
But that's only half of the lines, or even less than half. We have winches. The other ones, which are connecting to the towers, elevated from the cables, they have no winches. So the ultimate solution, you may have to install a multi-electrical winches on cables, which is going to be difficult and expensive.
Yeah, it wasn't designed to be maintained.
Right.
Well, then if it's a design failure, then you need to take it to a fitter where you can get it designed properly.
I mean, again, I think the use of this material, whatever it is, I don't remember the brand name, is highly experimental for our application. So that was kind of risky, and I don't know if this is going to work. And I would recommend caution in other similar applications for long stretches like we have across the river at John Day.
But I think, Tom, you bring up a good point, but that we're in a situation here, such this thing with design by CRFM, whatever you want to call it. And
well, it's designed under CRFM and fitter wing, and if your design is not meeting its needs, then you need to take it back and get a redesign and have CRFM fund it. And if you're going to do that sooner rather than later, because the president's budget just came out, CRFM next year actually didn't do too bad, so I would strongly encourage you to move quickly.
Will do.
You have through Philippe.
Yes, Fitter Design. George Medina was the project manager, and he loves his project anyway, so.
He likes to carry out stuff.
He does. He's also the quarter player guy.
Yes.
Yeah. I noticed a trend.
Again, the advantages like of the material was lightweight
and
strength.
Yeah.
Well, but again, that stretching thing I think was misrepresented because nobody has ever tried.
There was a lot of experimental things here. I mean, the diameter was larger than what we thought it ought to be, but it seems to be working from a goal standpoint. So.
And the stretch, I think it's about 3% per like 100 feet. And if you do the math, that means you end up extending those things. They're huge. Like, yeah. So the stretch will give you 20 feet more length. At that point, you're in the room.
The height was an issue too, so really what you need is a way to take up the slack and then reduce the
So we live and learn. Now we gotta fix it. So I'm gonna bring it to Langsley to bring to you, I guess.
We have SCT next week.
SCT.
It's gonna be
well, it's not gonna be something that O&M can cover, I can tell you that right now. All right, do we need to take a break and lunch, or are we going to keep going? We've got some things here. I don't know. We've got some BPA updates, some forms, some and task group updates, but we do have some outstanding change forms to deal with.
It'll take a while.
Good
lunch.
Okay.
Good place for lunch around here. That was close.
Lunch it is. Let's take a.
Well, I'd say get it and bring it back.
Get it, bring it back, and we'll try to get back here by one ish or so.
Glad you're generous.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what's lunch around here.
That's around here. I'm
okay. 1:15.
Good. 1:15
on the phone.
Let's go to one.
Yeah.
Tom, you got to tell us what's around here since we don't really.
There's Lloyd has a bunch if you want to go that far. There's Brina Boys, one up front, one out the parking lot back there. And there's, you watch the Noah building, there's Benzo and Quizno.
It's almost like you get to the point where.
I know that.
Yeah.
It's the beauty of Lloyd Center, man.
You got a bunch of Lloyd. You got a bunch of Lloyd.
Actually, you know, 2 hours plenty.